This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca on a Thursday. Going to be another lovely day. Saw wind, hopefully, here in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. Reaching the 20s. Beautiful October this week so far. Lots to get to today. We're going to delve into the Winnipeg Jets a little bit more. Lots of calls concerning the loss to Columbus yesterday. I don't think we could get to them all, so we'll have another full hour, as we do each and every day, about Jets and anything else you want to talk about. 9 o'clock on the Boston Pizza fan line. We're going to delve into the CFL, and the craziness continues in Saskatchewan with the Riders, the Blue Bombers. We'll delve into that as they return to practice as well. 2 days now, Major League Baseball playoffs, lots to get to. Two chances to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas. Of course, Emily Kaplan from ESPN is going to join us to talk some hockey. Paul Edmonds, the voice of the Jets. Jeff Reinbold to kick off week seven, eight. They all run together for me now seven. In the National Football League. Seven, thank you. And that gets started tonight with actually what looks like a good one. Not as good as I think it was in the preseason, but the Chiefs and the Raiders. Josh Morrissey, defenseman of the Winnipeg Jets, is going to join us live at 8:45 as well. And then, like we said, an hour of your phone call, NHL news and notes as well. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Gentlemen, how are we today?
Not too bad, boys. We got some this time of year is always cool where I live. We got a lake behind us, and there's always, you know, that whole geese thing going on. And this time of year, piles of geese there. But at this time of year, for whatever reason, the eagles come. And they start feasting on the geese. And there's always been a couple of bald eagles there. Yesterday, guys, there was a golden eagle. And we walked up fairly close to it. I swear to goodness, perched, it might be 4 feet tall. It's the biggest bird I've ever seen. Like, it is unfreaking believable. Just sitting up there and looking down at these geese, like, and you know the geese know what's going on, right? And the eagles just sit in the trees forever looking, and then, you know, you'll look out in the afternoon or something, or early morning, and they're down on the shore, like, picking away at the carcass of one of these geese that it took down. These things are majestic, and this one, guys, like, you're concerned that it might pose a threat to you when you're walking out there. What its wingspan would be, and if to actually stand beside it, it is mind-blowing, just beautiful stuff.
Are there any falcons out there?
No, just these. Just normally, there's always a couple of bald eagles there, but now you've got this two bald eagles and this one massive golden eagle. It's really cool to just sit and watch them. I spent a couple hours just watching them yesterday.
Yeah, you gotta. Some of those eagles are gigantic and slightly terrifying. Oh, yeah. You always got to be careful with birds with erratic flight patterns, too.
I was offering up the min pin. You know, leaving the min pin out in the backyard a little longer than normal yesterday, hoping. Might be a swoop situation with an eagle on the min pin.
I'd give you an eagle sound, but it's way too early. That's the kind of stuff I got to get dialed up a little bit. By the way, I was at the Jets game the other night, and in the press box, one of the off-ice officials that worked for the National Hockey League said that he's an official in high school hockey, and the other night he was doing high school girls hockey, and one of the teams was coming down the hallway going, let's go, ka-ka! Oh, yeah. And I'm like, don't give me credit for that. There's, I don't want to shape our youth. I don't want to be responsible for shaping our youth with bird noises. Throughout the day yesterday, just seeing how the worlds and I guess the different realms of it cross paths with the sporting world and the passing of Gord Downie, just still really shooken by it. Like, I literally never met the man, and if I did, it was when the Junos were here and they were going into the Hall of Fame, and the whole sort of mantra around them going into the Canadian Music Hall of Fame was that we're not done yet, we're not retiring. And the Junos was back in, was it 05 or 06 here in the city? And just, I think I shook his hand once. I remember interviewing Robert Baker, and I remember interviewing Robert Baker, the guitar player, because he had pigtails or braids in his long hair. And I was trying to sort out where I was, and there were seven bands at the arena out in Selkirk for the Juno Cup. And I referred to him as the drummer from Blue Rodeo, and he was the most gracious man on the planet, because then I followed that up with, I'm seriously a big Hip fan. I apologize over and over. I can't, you know. And him just saying, it's all right, man. There's so many bands here, and it's so many. We just appreciate the coverage. But just, you know, so fascinating how the country has reacted to the loss of Gord Downie.
So interwoven in every aspect of Canadian. And there was a point that was made yesterday, and I believe it was by Gino Retta, that I kind of forgot about, is that in the early 90s, and like I was as a kid, I was always infatuated by things America. You know, like I was like American, just sort of that like bigger, better than us. Had all the, a lot of my dreams were sort of American set sort of thing. I went to college down there, all the rest of it, and it took me 4 years of college to really come to a true understanding and love of Canada. But to come home and then to get introduced to the Hip once I came home, and how cool Gord Downie, through their lyrics in that band, made things to be that were Canadian.
Yes.
Like instilling that pride of really, truly being proud to be, being proud of all the little things that differentiate us from the rest of the globe, and maybe specifically from America. I had kind of forgotten about that element of the Hip and how much that affected me and all of us as well. And it's real. I don't know what percentage, but contained within our DNA as Canadians, the tragically Hip live. And for our little, you know, and everyone's got stories like this. Our little group, my little group coming out of college that lived together and hung out and stuff like that. Like the stories that we have where the Hip plays such critical roles in the backdrop or the foundation, the relationship with some specific songs that summon certain memories. It's like that for damn near every Canadian. It's just truly the connection that Gord Downie and the Hip have and had with us and will continue to have, because this music isn't going anywhere. It's absolutely beautiful.
I'm so glad you said that, because that is really, growing up and being a sports fan and all my buddies and all playing sports, and we all want to go to the NBA or go to the NFL, and I'm a Bears fan, and everybody wants to, you know, do this and you know, not become American, but that's all we see on TV at the time, mm-hmm. other than, you know, Hockey Night in Canada and stuff. And literally in high school and then into college, it literally taught us to be proud of Canada and everything we are. Not that, you know, any of my friends or I were ashamed of being from Canada. We love the country. But everything was so Americanized back then. And everything was so like, oh, wouldn't it be great to go to school in the States?
There's almost an inferiority complex, right?
And listening to the Hip literally said, you know what? It's cool to be sitting out here on a lake at 6 a.m. with your uncle or your dad. And it's okay to watch birds fly and look at the beautiful Canadian sky.
Yep.
And then just the lyrics of everything, too, on how it touched with you. It literally was fascinating and heartwarming to watch the country react to the loss of Gord Downie and the effect the Hip had on us. And, you know, so many NHL players, including the Jets and Paul Maurice, touching in on it in the songs. And that's what's interesting, too, because, like, I don't know how much I have in common with Ben Sherratt as a different generation and everything like that. But to see him talk about the Hip and feel the same thing about certain songs that we all feel, it was a really cool reaction, I thought, to see how the country reacted to the loss of Gord Downie. And not just Gord Downie, but the tragically Hip. Listening to their music nonstop yesterday, and even in my truck riding in today, just the band. Like, I say this all the time, and I know I make fun of hair metal and all this stuff, and I enjoy all kinds of music, but I strongly believe in why I like Big Wreck, too, is musicians playing musicians. And there are times when Gord's done, and they just play for a minute, and it's just tight and good and sounds like the whole Hip itself. We lost Gord Downie, but the whole band changed the way so many Canadians feel about music, about Canada, and who we are.
And it was funny, too, because I was driving around yesterday and just listening to some of the Hip songs that were on, and I kind of looked back to even the last couple of weeks, and I just it's almost, it feels like it's almost daily where I would just be kind of humming a hip song to myself. Yeah. And this was before the, like, it just, all their songs are so entrenched in basically everyone in this country that, you know, there's basically any kind of mood, any kind of time of the day, it's like, oh yeah, this song applies right now. And there's very few bands that can do that, and not only that, but to do that across multiple generations, age groups, ethnicities, all that sort of thing. Like, they were just, they were, and I mean, when's the last time you saw the leader of a country weep on TV and on camera because of what a musician meant to both him and the country as well? Like, there's just very few people in any country, really, that will have the kind of impact on that one specific group of people that, you know, both Gord Downie and The Hip did.
I remember first getting Road Apples, and this is back, like, I know that albums as a collection of songs or CDs, they're not what they used to be. Like, before, it used to be basically like a book, a front and back, and you'd really go through the whole work and that sort of thing, and now it's much more about singles and stuff like that. But I remember getting Road Apples, which is right after Up to Here, which was a massive breakthrough for them. And the first time I heard Road Apples, I was like, wow, I don't really like this. And then you listen to it again, and pretty soon it's like that. Like, they had such a distinctive sound.
So much hip
about
was like
them,
that
huh?
For me,
yeah. And then you really start to latch on to the songs, and next thing you know, a month after the initial, I'm not so sure I like this, you know every single lyric to every single song, and it's just littered with classics and all the rest of it.
And just so many lines, not just the music you're humming along daily, but once a week or once a month, something will come across, like something will literally happen in your life, or you'll read something or hear something, and then just think of a hip line, like, nobody's interested in something you didn't do.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it just so many
things.
Or you've
got a boatload of nerve. Like, there's probably 10 specific lyrical quotes from hip songs that you can apply to daily life on a fairly constant basis. Huh?
She said, come on, let's go. And then you just know the rest of the lyrics. Yeah. And it's fascinating, and I deeply heartbroken, as I know we all are, and especially in the fashion in which we knew it was coming but didn't expect it. But then to sort of hear the news has turned over to something that it nothing to do personally with the music itself, but just proud of it and proud to be Canadian and proud of what the Tragically Hip accomplished throughout their 30-year career. CTV is going to air the documentary that I was talking about on their last tour, long time running. They were going to air it this weekend, but they're bumping it up till tomorrow night. It'll be 7 o'clock Central Time here in Manitoba on CTV.
Commercial free, too.
Commercial free, cool. Which, I mean, we're in the business, so we understand. But for those of you who aren't, that is massive for a network to do. So it'll be on tomorrow. Jets game is on tomorrow as well. I highly recommend you PVR this. You'll be able to watch it. And I still have the final concert that was aired on the CBC on my PVR. And I don't know if I'll ever delete that, but... anyways, it's tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, CTV, long time running. And that's what, again, when I got the news yesterday and when I saw the documentary 2 weeks ago, was just for no other reason, just happy for those five guys who started in high school, got to do one last tour together like that. It must mean so much to them and meant so much to them too. We'll get into the Jets and sports when we come back. We'll do that on the Big Show on TSN 1290 next.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is excited for the UFC Fight Night December 16th at Bell MTS Place. Tickets go on sale this Friday at 10 a.m. through Ticketmaster.ca. You can win tickets by texting FIGHT to 129090. We'll also be throwing in pre-fight dinner at the official sports bar of the UFC in Canada, Boston Pizza. Standard message rates may apply for text entries. Grand prize winner will be announced Monday, October the 23rd, with The Big Show. Want another chance to win? We're adding a pair of tickets to the TSN 1290's Man Cave. Visit TSN1290.ca for contests and details on that. And to enter now, I'll have more details on that later in the program as well. Jim, Troy, and Brandon, 21 minutes past the opening hour on a Thursday here on The Big Show. Winnipeg Jets went back to practice yesterday. Dustin Byfuglien was the only player not on the ice. That was for a maintenance day, is what we're being told. And we're going to hear from Paul Maurice later in the show, talking a lot about speed and
you know, reacting to the game that they had. Obviously, nobody happy with the effort against Columbus and getting ready for a divisional battle tomorrow night right here on TSN 1290 against the Minnesota Wild. Do you feel any different about it? They're 3-3, the fashion in which they won, the fashion in which they lost, and going forward here, is there anything being worked out? Do you think that maybe in six more games it could be settled down? On Friday, could it be better? What are your thoughts after a day of dissecting the Columbus loss?
I don't feel any different, and I most definitely don't feel any more soothed. You know, like you'd hope a day after maybe something that takes you to a certain high or something that takes you to a certain low that you might sort of settle back towards some sort of mean or middle ground somewhere, but I don't feel that way at all. I'm really like nervous or concerned about the bottom half of the team as far as the forward group goes, and just really wondering where that's headed, how that's going to be remedied. And then just from an overall, I have a lot of trouble coming to any level of understanding how in such a critical year, in game six, for the love of Pete, you got team leaders coming out and saying, hey, these kind of games happen. And that's in game six, and that's the second time, I believe, that we've heard that reference. I just don't understand how in a season where overall team defense was so emphasized and so obviously critical to this group, that we can see the level of gong show and lack of consistency already, and we're at game six. Like, shouldn't they have been able to come out of the gate and at the very least deliver the level of consistency that would point you towards the possibility of thinking, okay, they still have some growth to do here? Like, I would rather them come out and play at 60% of what they're capable of as a team and see that in the first six games, like hover around that 60% mark, than something that's more like 80-20, like the spectrum covered already in the first six games. That to me is of great concern, and that really makes me question the connection with the players and the coaching staff. I don't understand the lack of consistency at all.
Yeah, and coming into this year, I think I had a fairly optimistic take on where the Jets would end up following the season. I thought a lot of things would fall into place for the team, and basically, I guess looking back on it, basically just about everything going right for them. And six games in, I feel like the majority of that optimism has kind of washed away. Like, and maybe the big thing for me has been there hasn't been a whole lot of signs that would lead me to think that my preseason optimism was warranted, because it's been more of the same we've seen year in and year out from this team, right? Like, the penalty kill's been the exact same. The power play's struggling still, but maybe that's the one thing I'm fairly confident about, because I think eventually they'll be able to get rolling on that. But defensively, still poor. It just feels like more and more of the same is going on here, and there's just not a whole lot of reason for me to watch, having watched the six games, to think, all right, they're 3-3, they haven't played good, but there's some signs they're going to improve down the road. I just haven't been given that through six games so far.
Well, for me, I'm sort of sitting at, I expect them to improve. I expect every team to improve coming out of the gate. To what magnitude, I don't know. There's definitely question marks, but as I said at the start, I'll give it 10 to 15 games and sort of see if that changes. I understand that could be, if things go drastically poor, you know, your season to kick off the year. But I maybe have a higher raised eyebrow than I did in the preseason, but I still think that there's some time here to sort things out. But, I mean, it's a crucial time. And it's, I think, every 5-game span, every 10-game span this year is crucial for this team. They're 3-3. They've scored 18 goals for and given up 23 goals. And that's the one thing we haven't talked about enough, is are they scoring enough from what we expected? And I know we debate at length the top six, bottom six. I know there's only 2 points from the bottom six, all that stuff. But are they scoring? Because when I look at the Toronto Maple Leafs and where they sit at 6-1, They have 22 goals against. The Jets have 23 against, but they have 34 goals for.
This is an age-old debate for a lot of Jets fans. Right now, the Winnipeg Jets are 16th in goals for per game, and they are 26th in goals allowed per game. So are they scoring enough? Well, not when you're letting in 3.86 goals per game, you're not scoring enough. But if you want to identify the problem area, you're about average right now, and yet you're underachieving from a goal-scoring perspective. But when you're pouring them in at 3.86 per, that's putting a whole lot of stress, right? And that's the element, that's the part of the team that needed to improve dramatically, and that's what's dragging you down. It's still defensively related. That's what's killing you.
Are they scoring enough?
The Jets?
Yeah.
No. not. I mean, the top six is doing okay. The top six is 16th in the league. I don't know. The bottom six hasn't contributed so far.
Because that's the one thing we didn't ever question coming into this season, was how many goals they would score, or how much offense they'd put up. We'll take a break. We'll hear more from Paul Maurice and the Jets as we go on, but we'll talk some Bombers next, and we'll hear from Mike O'Shea on the Tragically Hip as well, being a good Ontario boy. That's next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Gypsum Drywall Interiors present Caring for Kids. Support the staff and services of the Children's Hospital Foundation of Manitoba today. Text KIDS to 129090 with standard message rates may be applying. Every time you do, Gypsum Drywall Interiors will donate $1 to the Children's Hospital, up to $1,000. Your actions can help the Children's Hospital keep caring for kids across Manitoba, kids like Michaela, who is currently battling cancer. For more on Caring for Kids, visit tsn1290.ca. Jim Tolf, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you on The Big Show. Lots to get to and lots of hockey in the Royal Sports Power Hour. And don't forget, your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas is coming up in the next hour as well. We have two chances for you this morning on The Big Show. Let's go to the Bombers. They were at practice yesterday, and we'll just start with this as we started the show. Head coach Mike O'Shea was asked about the passing of Gord Downie, lead singer of the Tragically Hip. Oh, just one sec.
Computer froze.
Fine. Here's head coach Mike O'Shea on the passing of Gord Downie.
Mike, I just wanted to ask, you know, you being a rural Ontario guy, you've spoken a lot about, you know, your pride in being a Canadian, and just wondering if you had a comment, if you were a fan of the Tragically Hip or Gord Downie, and, you know, following.
Yep, big fan. Very sad day today here in the news. You know, we've had the hip cranked out here in the locker room and in my office too for the majority of the day. I think I saw the hip three times. I got a buddy who's seen him 21 times, including three times on their last tour. I was telling Darren there's some great stories around it. And that, you know, finishing high school in 89 and going through university, I can, you know, what I said to my son is, basically, every good time that me and my high school buddies had, and Gord mentioned that, you know, he got to play music with his high school buddies. So the group of high school buddies I have are fantastic guys, and we hang out all the time. And pretty well through that stretch, the hip was always playing in the background. So, yeah, it's a sad day for Canada.
Did you ever meet him?
He was in the chiropractor's office I was in. We had the same chiropractor for a bit, and I remember him sitting there, and he had one of his children with him. And I didn't go. I was just, you know, gobsmacked. So I didn't go and say anything to him. I just stared at him, probably. You know, it's Gord Downie.
How long ago was that?
Oh, years ago. Yeah.
He might have been gobsmacked to see you.
No.
Appreciate it, Mike. Thank you.
He might have been actually. But that's a cool story. I see him in a chiropractor's office and I can't go say hi to him. One guy's a lead singer, one guy's a middle linebacker, and they're both in at the chiropractor. Head coach Mike O'Shea on the passing of Gord Downie. He also talked about Ian Wild, who is coming off the 6-game IR from that broken wrist and will return to the lineup this weekend.
You got a very good football player who's ready to go. And shoot, he's smart. He's active. He'll play good football for us. So it's that time of year. Let's get guys playing.
I'm lukewarm on Ian Wild. I know they're high. I believe very strongly they're high as an organization on him, for sure. But I'm just kind of lukewarm on his return as far as the impact that they're going to have. And I did see Darren Bauming in his daily email to us, giving us the update and everything going down to practice, that running a little bit with him and a couple of other options at that strong side linebacker as a possibility. So we'll see how that whole thing plays out, of course, with the possibility of Fogg going over there as well. But as I've said a number of occasions, with the level of play of Santos Knox and Knox at that weak side, they've filled the shoes and whatever void existed in losing a guy like Ian Wild. And it's nice if he does come back. He does make a lot of tackles, and at least that linebacking core is getting stronger, and that also helps to bolster your cover teams on special teams.
And he's going to play limited action this week in his first game back. You don't think it'll be much of an impact? Or
I think Santos Knox is everything that Ian Wild is, and maybe even more than that. But, Ian Wild always made a pile of tackles and all the rest of it. He's a little bit undersized, and I've never been real high as far as being a real impactful player. So I just kind of lukewarm on him. I don't know that he's not going to come back. I don't think he's going to get his job back over Santos Knox. I think Santos Knox has been playing at too high a level.
I kind of wonder if this is a possibility at all, but I doubt it because Mike O'Shea is a super loyal guy and doesn't like to change things up too much, but is there a possibility that the Bombers could go small at linebacker and take Sam Hurl out of the lineup? Because I agree with you where, to me, Santos Knox isn't coming out of the lineup as long as he's healthy. He just makes way too many plays out there, and you need as many playmakers as you can in the linebacking core. But I wonder if maybe you can roll with some kind of a trio of Santos Knox, Knox, and Wild, and maybe you sacrifice a little bit in the run game, but give yourself a better chance in terms of holding off explosive plays off the board.
You need to make up for the Canadian spot then.
Which they usually have an extra guy anyways because mm-hmm. Harris had running back.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just something I've been thinking about. If you want to be a bit more explosive in the linebacking core, it's an option, but I don't know if I really expect it from O'Shea either.
Yeah, I'm not sure. For Richie Hall, I like Ian Wilder. Where he'll fit in, it will be interesting. But, I agree with what – he's just a good football player. But what his impact will be. But I also agree with you, too, that Santos Knox has come in and earned himself everything he's gotten. Let's go over to Richie Hall, defensive coordinator for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. He talked specifically yesterday about the loss of Mr. Maurice Leggett.
Well, I think it's a big loss. You know, he's an integral part of our defense. You know, he's at that position where it's the dime position, which is a playmaking position, and he's made plays the whole time that I've been here. You know, but at the same time, you know, we lost him earlier in the year, and you know, it's the next man up. You know, the thing that I like about our football team is that we have good depth. You know, and you know, people that didn't have a name always makes a name for themselves. So, you know, the bottom line is, you know, whatever group of guys that we have in that locker room, that's what it's going to take for us to get to Ottawa in November.
There's Richie Hall on the loss of Maurice Leggett. As I said, they'll have to get to. These are devastating injuries at this time of the year.
Yeah, and I'm not devastating. Like Darvin, both I think the team can survive and move forward even with. But like to me, Matt Nichols is a devastating injury that puts an end to any thoughts really of possibly accomplishing anything come playoff time. Leggett and Adams, you've got the depth that you can't cover them, and I even with Leggett, with Maurice Leggett there, I feel comfortable with Fogg going in there and giving you something fairly close to what Leggett was performing. And certainly with Washington and with some of the other depth that you got here, potentially Givens, I know Darvin Adams is solid for sure, but I just think those are two pieces of the puzzle that you can for instance that you can fit around, and I think the Bombers still get a playoff, that home playoff victory, even with those pieces out. So I don't see it as devastating, but I think it makes a very highly unlikely victory in Calgary For the West Final, that much more unlikely with a couple of pieces like that missing.
Yeah, I still kind of lean towards devastating with Leggett. With Adams, not so much, just kind of what you mentioned there. The Bombers would still be favored in a home playoff game against Edmonton or Sask, but do you really see a way they beat Calgary outside of just some crazy, just obscene amount of turnovers
something? And there was a playoff game, it might be a handful of years ago now, where the Stamps were playing Saskatchewan, and I believe the turnover ratio in that game was the Stamps had 7 and Saskatchewan had 1, and Saskatchewan had the upset win there. So if something like that transpires, yeah, then I can see the upset. But other than that, with how sound Calgary is and basically just how superior they are, especially on the defensive side of the ball, it's going to take like not just one miracle. A couple of miracles would have to happen on that game day for whoever goes into Calgary to win.
We're talking Bombers and hearing from some of the coaching staff here on the Big Show this morning, TSN 1290. Offensive coordinator Paul Appelese talked specifically about the loss of Darvin Adams yesterday.
He's a talented football player, and it's disappointing for him because I love him as a player. But, I mean, other teams will see if I lose guys and they have to go perform. So we're going to, you know, we still think we have guys who can stretch the field, and we have talented players. So the next man's got to step up and make their plays.
Speaking of the next man up, here is Coach Paul Appelese on the new guys in the lineup.
Not really a big deal because everybody's got to play through it and go through it. So we try to teach our players concepts from day one, and nobody here in our system plays the so-called X or the Z. We roll through every spot, and you have to know, hey, you got to go inside to play, you got to go outside to play, so the guys have to understand concepts.
And Chris Givens expected to be in the role of Darvin Adams. He was on the first team offense practicing. Here's offensive coordinator Paul Appelese on Chris Givens.
Yeah, he's been working in and getting opportunities and decent player. And, again, we try not to get into what they've done before, because that doesn't really matter, but he's shown well in practice, and really, system-wise, he's really been, hasn't made a lot of mental mistakes. And hats off to our players. I think our players do a great job of communicating when they're in the huddle with guys who have moved around spots, so they've done a really good job of making sure everybody's on the same page.
It is remarkable how it just doesn't matter. He touches it on there, what guys have done in the past. Givens, 40 games or 4 years, whatever it's been in the NFL, and then you could have a kid come out of CIS with his first start in a receiver position that for some reason takes to producing for the team at a quick rate. It really doesn't matter whatsoever. So a big test here for the offense, and also really important, as Eddie Tate points out today at BlueBombers.com, a real important situation this weekend for the Bombers to get back on track offensively. The last three games that the Bombers have been their fewest offensive plays per game, all consecutive here. So they need to get back on track. And utilizing guys like Andrew Harris and just overall, Paul Appelese is talking about the attention to detail. Funny how we're expressing that so greatly with the two big teams in the city right now, the Jets and the Bombers. But that attention to detail and get that offense to stay on the field for longer periods of time.
And we'll end our Bomber segment today anyway, and we'll discuss this on the Boss Pizza fan line with you as well at 9 if you wish. Is the Andrew Harris looking for 1,000 yards rushing and 1,000 yards receiving? A lot of people wondering as the season wears on and that final game in Calgary how much players will play. Head coach Mike O'Shea was asked if Harris would play, given the fact that he is chasing that, if they had nothing to play for at the end of the regular season.
It's about winning and continuity and going in on a with a good frame of mind. Right. So I'd really have to wrestle with all that and figure out how it all fits together in my mind, and then talk to the staff and talk to players and see where it all sort of, once again, pieces together, you know, in that specific situation, which we're not in yet.
Continuity is the one that stands out to me there, given the fact that we talk like, would you rest guys for a game? Would you play them for a half? It really, I think, when it comes down to it, in that last week heading into Calgary, he will talk to the players and go, how do you feel? How much do you want to play? How much do you think you should play? What do you think of me thinking this is how much you should play? That's an interesting comment, just going into, like, you don't want to get anybody hurt, but you also want to feel good going into the playoffs. And comfortable.
And Andrew Harris is going to want to play. I think by that Calgary game, right now he's got 871 rush yards. He's going to have, I believe, 1,000 by then. It's that pass where he's sitting at 816 right now that it's pretty easy to envision him being short of the 1,000 number come that game out in Calgary. and I'm really intrigued to see how they manage it. I know everyone's going to downplay from an individual standpoint and just the record of it, the coaching staff, players, everyone's going to downplay it. But I think inside that room that it means a lot to everyone involved.
I just hope he gets it. Hope he gets it before then. Like, don't make it a decision. Because let's be honest, if he's – let's assume he gets the 1,000 or he's right below it going into the game and he's about 50, 60 receiving yards short, they're playing him until he gets it. Because there would basically be a mutiny from the players, and it maybe more so from the O-line in particular, it kind of feels like, if Harris was taken out as a health precaution. Plus, Andrew Harris kind of has this Terminator sort of feel to him this year, where he's indestructible and just, I don't know. I'm not as worried about Andrew Harris as I am about Matt Nichols and what you do with him health-wise, because like Troy alluded to earlier, the season now officially rests on the health of Matt Nichols and the ability for the Bombers to win a playoff game. So I would be more, honestly, I would be much, much more worried about what I do with Matt Nichols than what I do with Andrew Harris.
The thing looking at Harris's past is it in 2013 in BC, he ended up with 998 yards. I am positive he had a bonus for 1,000 yards and was kept off the field there. Last year, I'm assuming like almost any back of the caliber of Andrew Harris is going to have a bonus for 1,000 yards. Last year, he had 974 with the Bombers, and if I recall correctly, was taken off the field early in the final game as well. So, or not fed the ball as much as would be necessary to get 1,000 yards. So it's an interesting thing.
The one in BC, I remember specifically because there was like a minute and a half, 2 minutes to go, and they needed one or two or three yards, and they threw three straight passes, including on third down instead of punting. And everybody on third down.
That's not coincidence.
Everybody on third down thought, well, they're going for it on third down because they want to get Harris. And then they threw another pass, and Harris was, you could see on the sidelines, livid. And I understand why. We'll take a break here and get into the Major League Baseball playoffs. Plenty of hockey talk coming up in the next hour as well. This is The Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca. The Astros lost yesterday, so we won't spend any time on the baseball playoffs. We'll get right into the CFL and, thumbs down to Gary. You know who? Look, I don't dislike a lot of people. I don't like the smirk on Todd Frazier's face.
I don't like Todd Frazier either.
I don't you just arrive there. You're acting like it's your team. You strike out way too often. You nine-ironed a pitch out of the ballpark thanks to the wind, and now you're like the cock of the walk? I don't think so, Todd Frazier. Your dad still cutting your hair there, buddy?
How worried are you, man?
Well, I am concerned because with this series, and we always hear this series came down to this, this series came down to that. We heard that when they were up 2-0, and they said that drop ball at home plate by Sanchez. The thing that worries me is the up 4-0. You can't blow those games in the playoffs, and you can't blow that in the seventh inning and lose 6-4. It's not Verlander I'm worried about, and I'm always worried after Keuchel and Verlander. I expected Keuchel to have a game like that. It's the bats.
182, I think, right now in this series, right?
It's the fashion in which the bats aren't working. The Altuve at bats yesterday were totally out of sync of what he's done not only this year but for 3 years. Like his swinging out of the zone, and it's to me, they look like they're trying to do something as opposed to just letting it happen, and that always worries me in a playoff game.
The Astros' bats getting cold, and the pinstripes are warming up.
And the worst part, too, is Altuve and Correa were the only guys hitting during the series. And not only that, but Altuve was clipping at like 450 or something.
Yeah.
So do you think that's going to continue, or do you think that comes back to earth a little bit? And if that happens, oh boy, you're asking for basically a complete 180 from the other 6-7 bats in the lineup, including Brian McCann, who I don't think could actually hit a beach ball right now.
So it's on the road, though, it's different for the Yankees. Mar- the numbers are stark.
Marwin Gonzalez led the Astros in RBIs with all the hitters they have this year, and he can't get a hit. Like, it's concerning. I have a lot of faith in Verlander, but a game seven, who knows? But I know he manages the Astros, but if he managed somebody else, I'd say the same. I love A.J. Hinch. Like, he's just smart, collected. Even after the game, he said, this series isn't over. This game is over. And we lost it, and this is what we needed to do better. But
if the Yankees could chase Verlander off that mound in the fifth or sixth, they got a chance.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's over.
That's
if
key.
They do that.
That's key, right? Just don't let that sucker go the distance.
And he just needs to get fifth or sixth, but they have to get the bats going. Like, they have to put yesterday, the first inning, they get a guy on second and they don't cash him in, and there's two outs to do it, or third, I should say, and I'm just like, that's crucial. You have to score in the playoffs when you have an opportunity, and they just haven't done it. The Cubs avoided elimination last night, beating the Dodgers. It's going back to LA. Any faith they have a little miracle left in them here?
No. I don't think so.
I don't know, because, and it's funny too, because you have Clayton Kershaw on the mound for the Dodgers tonight, and you want to talk about somebody who's been haunted by playoff demons of the past, and you just kind of wonder if he can't close things out, and if he has maybe some more seventh inning struggles. Just, I don't know. I'm not going to say it's over just yet, but I am still kind of hoping for Kershaw to. I hope he throws a gem tonight. I hope he goes 8 strong, 10K, something like that. So he can.
I like the way Kershaw talks about his playoff troubles. He himself is saying, "Hey, it's not like I pitched poorly in most of the games in the playoffs." He said, "We just haven't won the games," and quietly implying, you know, that the boys need to carry their weight. I need some run support as well, right?
Todd Frazier, act like you've been there before. You just literally got there. Emily Kaplan from ESPN is next. Get that thumb out of here, Gary.
Hey-da.
On the Big Show on the Royal Sports Power Hour on TSN 1290. Thanks, Gary.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN is proud to be a part of the iHeartRadio Network. Download the iHeartRadio app and listen to us on all your favorite devices, or go to the Perfect Four section and choose from hundreds of channels to suit any mood or music taste. Your music, your station's always free. Download the iHeartRadio app and get streaming today. This is The Big Show on the Royal Sports Power Hour. 5 minutes past the hour with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. We all have your NHL news and notes in this hour. Paul Edmonds, the voice of the Winnipeg Jets, will join us at the bottom of the hour to discuss the Jets as they get set to host the Minnesota Wild tomorrow with their 3-3 record, and we'll delve into that 5-2 loss to Columbus. Your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas is also coming up, but right now we're going to talk some hockey and some puck, and we should let you know that Josh Morrissey, the Jets defenseman, is going to join us at 8:45 today live. Once again, this week we'll get Josh's thoughts on the week that is and the weekend that's coming up. Let's talk some hockey right now with Emily Kaplan of ESPN Hockey. Emily, how are you?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Doing very well. Thank you for joining us today. And you got a great piece on ESPN about Austin Matthews and why he isn't more famous in America yet. I'll start with the question is, how famous is he?
It's a complicated question. where do I begin? But look, I'm a huge hockey fan, and there's a ton of huge hockey fans in America, and I think anyone who is earnestly a hockey fan would be ridiculous to say, I don't know who Austin Matthews is. That said, we know that hockey has an ongoing battle for visibility, and a lot of Americans are not hockey fans. And the thing that I find disappointing is that I feel like he hasn't made that mainstream crossover where even non-hockey fans know who Sidney Crosby is, they knew who Alex Ovechkin is. Thinking and I'm hoping and I'm praying they start to know who Connor McDavid is. But Austin Matthews is just on the cusp. And the genesis of the story really is I was in Los Angeles this summer with someone who's in sports media, a pretty prominent person that doesn't cover hockey. And I was talking to them about a couple ideas, and I mentioned Austin Matthews, and that person said, who? And it almost broke my heart. I was like, how do you not know who Austin Matthews is? I explained his backstory, explained how good he was for the Maple Leafs last year. And the fact that this person had no idea who Austin Matthews is, I marched to my editors and said, we need to write about this.
Names, Emily. Who was it? Names. No, I'm just kidding.
This person covers the NBA. I'll put it that way.
You know, and it is interesting because, like, so many people, like, if you're not a basketball fan, you know who LeBron James is. If, you know, you're not an NFL fan, you still know who Aaron Rodgers is. But it is – I'm wondering when this sort of crossover to the mainstream goes for Austin Matthews down south.
Emily, I'm wondering – and I remember that draft year thinking that if you were the owner of the Coyotes – just exactly how close to basically selling the farm would they have or could they have gone to secure? Can you imagine and we in Winnipeg are kind of – we're always sort of connected to the situations, the struggles
sure.
of the Coyotes. But just for a second, can you imagine the impact he would have had it just worked out magically that he landed and got drafted by the Coyotes?
I can't, and I literally can't. And just to build off that, I know Dave Tippett had said that they tried everything they could in their power to trade up for that number one spot. They dined Austin Matthews right up until the draft. They obviously fell in love with him as a person and on the ice. But no, I can't imagine that impact. And I will say the thing that's so interesting and complicated about Austin is we see his impact obviously in Canada, specifically in Toronto. We see his impact, too, in Arizona. I talked to Shane Doan for the piece, obviously the longest, tenured Arizona Coyote of all time, the last standing Winnipeg Jet, really, or Winnipeg player. And he said it's incredible the impact Austin had. Like, from when I got here to where we are now with hockey, it's out of control. And I do start to see Austin Matthews fans in Arizona, which is really exciting to me. So those two places are definitely seeing an impact. It's just the rest of the country. I'm like, come on, guys, catch up.
The other piece you have, Emily, that's fascinating to me, and it's a great story, is the NHL's first Australian-born player, Nathan Walker of the Washington Capitals. How does this happen?
It happens with a lot of fortuity and persistence. He's a great kid. He's so much energy on the ice and a ton of energy off the ice. And pretty much what happened is he's playing youth hockey in Australia, which is not huge. There's, very, very small numbers, even smaller than Arizona, if you can believe that. And he and his team are in this youth tournament in the Czech, in Czech Republic. And the Czech coaches were so impressed with this kid. They're like, who is he? And his coach explained, look, he's the best player in our country, but he's never going to grow because our youth development system is not good. It's just not going to be challenged. And they kind of passed this plan, or what if he stays? And this kid wanted to play hockey so bad that he pretty much begged and pled and called his mom and said, I don't want to go back to Australia. Please let me stay here. And he did. And from then on, he was trained like a European player, and that's how he ended up on this track to now play for the Washington Capitals.
Emily, I saw how you tweeted out Wisniewski had this little piece, and I heard this discussed. We heard it discussed last year as well, the possibility of it, and the Southern Professional Hockey League, of course, adopted it. But just imagine some of the madness and how it would help to really pour a bunch of gas on rivalries if the playoffs in the NHL, if they were determined, if the top teams picked who they wanted to play in the playoffs, that would just lead to some wild rivalries.
Oh, my gosh, I know. And it's funny because after that tweet, I got a text from one of my buddies who works for an NBA team. He works for the Bulls here in town. I live in Chicago. And he was like, they do this in the NBA D League. It's not as fun as you think it is. And I was like, way to be a killjoy. Let us just have some fun. Like, this sounds like so much fun. And come on, this is the D League. No one cares about that. So I'd love for it to happen. I would want to prove my friend wrong and say it would be fun, but we shall see.
So many people want to get fighting out of hockey. They need to get it out of the Bulls practice.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, that's your issues you got to deal with.
What's been a surprise or who has surprised you so far this early part of the National Hockey League season?
The Blackhawks have surprised me. I know they had a bad game last night, but just the fact that there were so many questions about are they regressing? Have they missed their window? Is getting the band back together a bad idea? And then they come out and kind of just play out of their minds offensively, and then Corey Crawford is, doing fantastic. The Leafs clearly are the team to beat right now. And you know what? Like, we had to do power rankings, and I was rolling my eyes for how high the Golden Knights were. I was like, this is ridiculous to put them this high. And, they were top seven or top six. They're playing good hockey. I mean, they're winning. And, as many questions and skeptics as I have of how long they could sustain it, right now they are an incredible surprise on the ice. And, of course, they're doing incredible things off the ice to galvanize that community.
Yeah, Emily, I just want to jump into that a little bit. Are you hearing anything specifically from management or players or fans, just away from the tragedy of what occurred in Vegas, but just sort of the impact and how it's taken a hold in seeing some of the highlights and watching a game with the Vegas Knights? The crowd looks really involved in the games. Things are going over really well early on, it looks like.
Sure. I was there for the season opener and had a chance to talk to a bunch of the players beforehand. And as far as the tragedy, I mean, they are doing everything they possibly can to integrate with the community. I think the problem with them always is going to be, okay, this is supposed to be a transient town. How are we going to build a bond with this town? Well, they're tested really early, but they're doing things like Derek England bought groceries for the fire station, is texting with the fire guys all the time because those are guys he has a connection with. Obviously, he's lived there for a long time. And, you know, after the game, they're all texting Derek England saying, thank you, this is a great distraction for us. So I think those kind of stories will emerge where you see just these small bonds, but very important ones. And as for the crowd, I mean, it was unlike any hockey game I've ever been to. There was Cirque du Soleil. There was, like, a drum line. It was weird. It felt like medieval times, honestly. But it was fun, and I'd want to go back.
Emily Kaplan from ESPN.com joining us, talking some National Hockey League today on the Big Show on the Royal Sports Power Hour, 13 minutes past the hour. Your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas is coming up in our next segment. You did a piece or had some stuff on JT Brown and his raising of his fist. Tell us about that, and he's come out and said he won't be doing that anymore.
Yeah, JT Brown is a player I talked to over the summer at the time where he had donated money to remove the Confederate statue in Tampa. And I think it's really difficult because he's a black player and there's only about 30 of them in the NHL. They are very much minorities. And when you see across all sports as players are taking a stand for social justice in this country, a lot of it pertains to racism. And so it's a really awkward position for an NHL player to join in on because, look, they already are so much a minority and they're calling attention to themselves. And a lot what I got into with that Austin Matthews story is that in the NHL there's this culture of compliance where you're just supposed to bow your head and do what you're told. So JT, I commend for, you know, using his voice in the right way. In my opinion, he's doing it in a respectful way. He's explaining what he's doing, and he's backing it up with community service. So he's not going to raise his fist anymore. But he has made such a commitment to the Tampa community where he's going and meeting with police forces. He does so much in schools with inner-city kids. So I recommend anyone who maybe feels uncomfortable with seeing players kneel or raising their fist to maybe just listen. Sometimes they have something to say, and JT certainly does. And you can check out his Twitter feed. I find him very inspiring.
Emily, you had a fun piece on Alexander Ovechkin and his diet and his sort of approach to the game here.
Yeah, so the point of that story was, look, everything around Alex Ovechkin's always changing, right? I mean, it's a totally different team, especially now. The game is faster, and people have moved on because he's been here so long. But there's one constant in Alex Ovechkin's life, and that's his pregame meal. And it is this heavy Italian meal of chicken with Alfredo sauce and pasta from this one restaurant called Mama Lucia's, and he gets it every single home game, and it's hilarious because apparently when he first got there, a lot of guys were into it. Now guys are more into nutrition. It has totally dwindled down to like him and a couple of his Russian buddies. So that's his secret sauce.
That's like Michael Scott in The Office carbing up before the walkathon that he ran. I got to carb up. That's great stuff, Emily. We really appreciate your time. Thanks for doing this, and we hope to talk to you soon.
All right, have a good day, guys.
Thanks so much, Emily. Take care. She touched on it a little bit. The ranking, ESPN has a panel of voters, yeah, and they rank the teams in the NHL. At 4, they've got the Devils, and at 6, they've got the Knights. The Golden Knights.
It's just always important to not overreact a week into the season. Are you kidding me?
But those are the weekly rankings, right? Like, is that weekly or is that for the season?
Well,
I think lots of times they sit there every week.
It's their power ranking, so that's where they figure the teams are at this moment in time. But like all the teams around them are all the teams that you'd expect to see. But a couple
I'll sell high on the Golden Knights and the Devils. I feel good with that.
The Devils, though, have been like playing well and are quite an intriguing team.
They're fast
team,
and
huh?
skilled.
They are,
like,
yeah.
They're well
coached.
I was gonna say they're not your old man's Devils, but yeah, people kind of forget New Jersey did lead the league in scoring one year when they won the cup. But outside of that, their shooting percentage is somewhere obscenely high, like 13% early on. So maybe they're the one team that becomes the outlier. But I'm not really holding my breath on that.
You can follow Emily on Twitter at Emily M. Kaplan, and we'll take a break. Come back with your first chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas, and we'll hear from head coach Paul Maurice on The Big Show on the Royal Sports Power Hour, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
12th caller through at 780-1290 as we are taking another qualifier for TSN 1290 and RedTag.ca's Hockey Nights in Vegas as we send five lucky listeners and their guests to Las Vegas this November where they'll see the Winnipeg Jets take on the Las Vegas Golden Knights Friday, November the 10th at T-Mobile Arena. Prize includes return airfare to and from Sin City, free parking at the Winnipeg Richardson International Airport courtesy of Park and Fly. Two hockey tickets to the Jets and Golden Knights on the 10th, of course, at their home arena. Four nights accommodation right on the strip at the MGM Grand and $1,290 in cold, hard cash to help you cover a few extras during your stay in Vegas. Listen for your chance to qualify and win weekdays here on The Big Show at 7:15 a.m. and 8:15 a.m., 12:15 p.m. on the Don Vito Roundtable with Kevin Olszewski, and 5:15 p.m. with Andrew Hustler-Patterson and Mr. Rick Ralph on the afternoon ride. You can watch for bonus chances to qualify online as well on our social medias, specifically the TSN 1290 Facebook page. Winners will be announced Monday mornings here on The Big Show, and the next grand prize announcement is coming up on October 23rd, and our fifth and final grand prize announcement, it will be on Monday, November the 6th. For more information, check out tsn1290.ca. Hockey Nights in Vegas, presented by redtag.ca, where Canada shops for great travel deals, and us here at TSN 1290. The 12th caller through, 780-1290. We'll do it again in the next hour and get as many qualifiers as we can. And just for qualifying today and every time, you get a Jets Gear gift card. And here we go with our 12th caller through today at 7:15. Our first qualifier of this lovely Thursday is...
I don't know if he's related to Aces, but it's Ray Weeb.
Ray Weeb!
Weeber!
Are you related to Aces?
Unfortunately not.
Oh. Well, that's good because you're literally, if you are, be sitting around the dinner table at family events non-stop for the rest of time hearing about the two Aces. And rightfully so. Ray, thanks for qualifying today. Just for doing so, you get a Jets Gear gift card and you are in for our next two grand prize draws. Congratulations. Thanks for listening. Have you been to Vegas?
Quite a few times, actually.
Oh. What's some of the activities you do?
And he clears the throat after that, too.
The last one was at a convention, and that was a lot of fun, but I'm looking forward to this. I'm really excited about this.
What kind of convention?
It was a work-related convention.
Ah, I see.
The old work-related convention.
I went to a convention once in Vegas, too. Those are long days because of the nights.
Yeah, it can... It can really be harder than it looks.
When there's a seminar
long
at 8.
Days because of the nights.
When there's a seminar at 8 and another one at 4, and then you have your nights, it makes for long convention days, for sure. And this is exciting because as a guy who's been there several times before, you now get to watch some National Hockey League while you're there, including your very own Winnipeg Jets. That's part of this contest that somebody mentioned to me the other day. It's like people love going to Vegas. People enjoy Vegas, everything it has. But now you can literally throw in a National Hockey League game.
I would be so happy to wear my jersey to that game.
Excellent. Do you know who you'd take with you yet?
I mentioned this to my wife, and she seems to think that she would be the automatic choice, but I'm thinking it's a guy's weekend.
Oh, yes.
You're a bold man,
if we can use a Vegas term, there'll be some parlaying and some doubling down in order to figure this out for you. Go ahead.
I would definitely go to the book room.
Well, congratulations just for qualifying once again. You get a Jets Gear gift card, and we wish you all the best in our next two grand prize draws. And thanks for listening to TSN 1290.
Thank you very much.
Good luck, Ray.
Ray Weeb, no connection to Aces. Aces!
He sounds tuned in, man. He knows what's going on all fronts.
He knows the real deal down in Vegas. Your next chance to qualify is coming up at 8:15 today on The Big Show, and then, of course, 12:15 with the Don Vito Roundtable and 5:15 with the Afternoon Ride. We'll get to some comments from head coach Paul Maurice after yesterday's practice and some of the things they worked on. Well, let's get his comments on how they moved on after the loss to Columbus on Tuesday night.
Well, we dealt with it, took a look at it again, and then tried to really spend a lot of time in practice going over the piece that we felt was lacking of anything, and that was the pace of our game, the speed of our game. We need to play, we need to play a quick game, and you got to get it into practice. So that was what today was all about. It was a shorter practice. I think it might have been written there a week or two ago that we had a real, real tough skate after that loss to Toronto. This one was tougher. It was shorter, but not in terms of stops and starts, that kind of punishment skate, and I didn't think there was one in the first one either, but they drove themselves really, really good pace here today and worked hard at it, and by the end of it, in a short amount of time, they were bent over, they had gone hard, so that's where we got to get our practice habits to so that our game can follow that.
Play like your practice, that's an old saying around high-level sports, right? Everybody knows that's true, man. You just can't flip a switch and all of a sudden do things differently on game day. One thing I've always really liked about Paul Maurice, and pretty early out of the gate, he made this distinction or made this comment where being fast in whatever sport that you play, it's not just about your God-given gill or skill to be quick in a physical sense, right? If you have strong anticipation, that can do so much to make you fast on the field or ice of play by reading the play in front of you. That you can save a step or gain a step by a high level of anticipation. And so that I think he's kind of getting into that as well, where if the boys, you know, if they're not naturally gifted, and we talk about how they're just an average team speed-wise in the NHL, but if you can be thinking properly and be where you're supposed to be a step earlier than the other team across from you, man, that comes across as speed as well.
We'll take a break and talk more Jets when the voice of the Jets on TSN 1290, Paul Edmonds, joins us next on the Royal Sports Power Hour.
This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Royal Sports Power Hour, TSN 1290, Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you. We do have the Thursday Nighter on TSN 1290 tonight between the Chiefs and the Raiders. Are you going to hit up Hustler and say you want to sprinkle some action on this Chiefs-Raiders battle?
No, I'm a little heartbroken and mystified by the Raiders. They might be the most disappointing team in the NFL this year.
Yeah.
I want to ask Coach Reinbold. We talked to Jeff Reinbold. I'm going to ask him about the Raiders. What's going on there, man?
Excellent. Good question. Who do you have tonight? The Chiefs then on the road?
Yeah, I'd lean towards the Chiefs.
Thursday nighter?
Sure. I think they respond, yeah, from last week, yeah.
I hope so. NHL news and notes coming up in this segment as well. But right now, we're going to talk some Jets with the voice of the Winnipeg Jets here on TSN 1290, Mr. Paul Edmonds. And this segment with Paul is brought to you by Gauthier Chevrolet on McPhillips, where for the month of October, get 0% financing on most new vehicles and get a Vegas vacation for two included. Gauthier Chevrolet, 1400 McPhillips at Inkster. Mr. Edmonds, how are you today?
I'm pretty good. Would you have to say that Vegas might be the most popular destination for Jets fans, maybe taking in the road game this year?
I would think it's taken over from Arizona.
Yeah, or Florida.
Florida's high. Yeah, there's a lot of Winnipeggers go down to Florida for the games too, aren't there?
Well, I always find that there's at least 1,000 Jets fans in Tampa.
Wow.
If they didn't have the 1,000 Jet fans in Arizona, there wouldn't be anybody there. But, and then, of course, you know, you sprinkle in your Nashville and your St. Paul and that. But I would think that there's going to be it's almost like the Mecca this year, Jimmy, that everybody's going to be flocking to Vegas.
You know, Paulie, this is an interesting thing. We've never talked to you about that aspect, because you're on the road with the team. Do you normally see, like, when you're down in Arizona and stuff like that, or some of these sort of destination spots, typically, and you come across fans from Winnipeg, are they typically the same people you see down there? And do you have much interaction with the fans when you're on the road?
You know, I don't see the same people. I mean, I always seem to run into Jets fans wherever we are. A lot of them, and I'm not being flippant or facetious, a lot of them don't know who I am, so by face. So I don't get recognized a lot, but you can pick them up because they're always wearing, you know, Jets regalia, whether it's a T-shirt or a jersey or some sort of a hoodie or something, right? The best story I have was I went to the Grand Ole Opry with Dennis one day. And we bought some tickets. We wanted to go see it. And if you get to Nashville, Nashville's great because basically you land, you get to downtown, and everything's there. The arena, all of the entertainment, your accommodations. So you don't even have to rent a car. But you might have to take a cab to the Grand Ole Opry, and I would recommend going to that as well, whether you like country music or not. So we go to the Grand Ole Opry, Dennis and I, and there's two pretty large groups of Jets fans that are there that we don't know they're going to be there, but they've taken the Grand Ole Opry as part of their sort of tourist attraction as well. And they recognize Dennis. So I'm with Dennis. So they all flock over to Dennis on two different occasions. And on two different occasions, some lady asked me, because I'm accompanying Dennis, if I can just take pictures of them with Dennis as I'm taking their cameras and taking pictures of them. It was hilarious. So there I am, you know, like the tour guide and the picture guy for Dennis Bayak, as all these Jets fans want pictures with him. So that's the kind of thing that goes on. I always find that they're, you know, the typical Winnipeggers and Manitobans. They're very friendly. They just want to come up and talk and say hi and ask a question or two. And then, you know, they move along on to the things that they're doing. So I really enjoy it. I've always, when there's the anthem going on, I've always tried to listen in every single city for the True North chant to find out how many Jets fans are there. And sometimes it's faint and you can hear a few, and then sometimes it's very audible, like Minnesota always is. I always find Toronto is very good. Vancouver is very good that way. Tampa Bay is as well. Sometimes some places in around California can be as well because of the climate. People want to go down there. So, you know, the Jets fans, to say it in a phrase, are pretty much everywhere.
Do you ever run across Ann Murray in Florida? Because apparently the snowbird moved down there like 20 years ago, golfs every single day, and has Florida Panthers season tickets, and that's all she does. In fact, when I was on an Air Canada flight and they had her greatest hits package come out, in an interview in a magazine I read on this flight, she was like quite arrogant about the fact, I'm done making hits, I've done my job, and I'm living in Florida with season tickets to the Panthers. That's what I do in golf.
Huh. You know, I'll have to look out for her the next time.
You will, you know.
And then if I see her,
save the last dance.
You know, maybe I could do a selfie with her.
Yeah. I'm not big into selfies myself, but you get a selfie with Ann Murray, and I might like that.
Polly,
or I could get Ann Murray's camera, get Bayak to get a picture with her.
Yes!
Polly, how surprised were you by the level of domination witnessed by Columbus?
Ooh, yeah, it, I wouldn't say it gobsmacked me, but it certainly took me a little bit back for sure in my chair. I knew the Jets were going to be in for a good game, and I thought that the Jets were going to be able to counter that. And as a result, we were going to watch 60 minutes of entertaining hockey, and we didn't get that. And we didn't get that because you're absolutely right. Columbus was dominant, and the Jets were forced into things that they didn't want to do. They were forced into a game that they didn't want to play. And I think that they were a little bit shocked as well as to how Columbus came on them. Columbus, for me, wow, we saw them in the midst of that 16-game win streak last year where they extended it, and they were getting towards 16. It was late in the streak when they came here and beat the Winnipeg Jets at the end of December, and they were really good and really impressive then. They took it to another level the other night. There's a few things that I watched about their game, the poise and the patience that they have inside their own zone with the puck. If that outlet pass isn't there, if that centerman hasn't curled properly, that defenseman's waiting, or they're moving it along the goal line to get a little bit of movement until they find that right pass or that right seam. There was nothing forced up the ice to advance the puck. their regroups, whether it was in their own zone or between the blue lines, were real, real good. Same thing, you know, waiting for the right opportunity. And then they can beat you with the speed. They've got some guys that are real quick. They can explosively jump away from you. I think of the Cam Atkinson goal, the first one for sure. And then some big bodies that can get down low and grind with you along the wall and in the corners. They were very hard to defend. And listen, the Winnipeg Jets came at Columbus at times as well. And Jonas Korpisalo was very good in the net as well. I mean, they ran into another goaltender that was equal to the task of the way his team played. I was very, very impressed, in a word, Westy, with Columbus the other night. Not ready to anoint them anything other than a pretty good team to start the year, maybe a very good team to start the year. Still a lot of season to go, but they seem to be the whole package right now early on.
Where are you on the Jets, Paul, six games in? Because as I'm sure you know, we all hear, some people are out, concerned, want changes. Other people, you know, are very interested in how the rest of this week and next week goes. And other people are like, just be patient. Where are you with this team? I'm a 10 to 15 game kind of guy. But where do you sit six games in at 3-3?
Well, I'm with you. The sample size is a little small for me to be excited about where they're going to be or overly critical. Having said that, though, you know, they are where they've been before, and that is at that 500 level and kind of meandering around that. And I think that certainly the expectation by everybody, as we've talked about several times on our station, has been greater than where they are right now. So I think that they've certainly got a team that's a little bit different than last year, especially with some players that they have. I think that there's a different level of commitment to other parts of their game and improving. Whether we see that on a consistent basis or not, remains to be seen, but we know that they're working on certain things. You know, to say I would be okay with where they're at would probably be a bit of a lie, because I kind of thought that, you know, even if they grabbed a point out of Columbus the other night, then they're starting to show some improvement. But, you know, we haven't seen a lot from them because they're 3-3. They've beaten a couple of pretty good teams. Vancouver certainly works hard and will challenge, and Edmonton was a real good team and a cup contender, and Carolina came in certainly with an expectation as well. So, you know, for me, the next stage or the next step is to see what they do in division, and that's coming up tomorrow night against Minnesota, who's off to a pretty bad start, but they've had some injuries. I mean, they're 1-1-2, but this is the type of game that you want to see that improvement made with the Winnipeg Jets. Oh, team comes in, they don't have their full lineup, interdivisional, you're at home, they're on the road, probably your biggest rival geographically, so let's see what you can do. Everything points to, if the Winnipeg Jets want to make a step and show improvement, that's a game that they really should have, just like the Carolina game, where it was a grind fest along the wall and in the corners, and not a lot happened, but they found a way to win that game. So we talked about that. Great teams or improving to great teams will find ways to win in those games. So I guess in a roundabout way, Jim, it's pretty early, but let's see what the next step holds here, and that would come as soon as tomorrow night at home against the Wild.
Kyle Connor looked comfortable to you?
He did. He did, yeah. And I think that knowing as a player, and you could speak to this, Troy, that you don't have to look over your shoulder for a month or maybe 5 or 6 weeks, that you know you're going to have that job and you can kind of settle into it a little bit, I think is peace of mind for sure. And that's where he's at. I would imagine the communication's been said to him, listen, Matthew Perreault is out for a little while, 4, 5, 6 weeks, 4 to 6, as they told us. So we're going to plug you into this spot, and we're going to give you a real good opportunity in where you need to be, where you need to be for this organization and for your career, and what your skill set dictates where you need to be. So that's to start in the second line. And as he went along, he finished on the top line, but interchangeable that way. So, yeah, he looked more comfortable as the game went along. He looked more comfortable after he had scored that goal. And it just seems that he's a little bit stronger, so that he can go in and get the puck and not get pushed off the puck when he's in those one-on-one battles or gets into a scrum. And, you know, you can certainly see the speed and then the talent that he has around the net by scoring that goal. And the goal was interesting for me because not only did he score it, but two passes prior to him receiving the puck to score the goal in a pretty good spot, spot at the side of the slot, he did all the work down low to generate that goal. So that's what I like to see from him, is not just the finish, but the fact that he's contributing to the offensive possession inside, in this case, the Columbus zone. So you could tell that with each shift, he was getting more and more comfortable. So I look forward to seeing him again and this progress going forward tomorrow. And just the fact that he knows that he's going to be up for a while in one of those roles and not on the fourth line or be asked to do something he's not comfortable with, I think bodes well for him and his progress and development over the course of the next 4, 5, or 6 weeks.
Paul Maurice decides to go back with Connor Hellebuck. Hindsight's 50-50. I thought, you know, Steve Mason would get one of these two games, but is this a chance, should things go well, for him to sort of run with it?
Well, you would think so. I kind of thought that the last time that we were on the air earlier this week, that Connor Hellebuck kind of deserved to keep the net. But, you know, you understand why he wants to get both guys in and keep both guys game ready. And guys, I don't watch the game over a lot. I'll certainly watch highlights on the television and sometimes tape the game and watch certain parts of it if I was unsure about what happened. But generally speaking, I listen to the games a lot, just to kind of, as we call our own industry, air check yourself. And I listened to pieces of the game the other day, and boy, there were some spots where Steve Mason held the Winnipeg Jets in that game against Columbus. There was a flurry of about 4 or 5 saves on one sequence there in front of the net, and just some of the looks that Columbus had. I really can't fault Steve Mason for the game that he played or he backstopped Winnipeg for the other night, despite the fact that it was a multi-goal loss. But on this side, Connor Hellebuck, as Paul has said, it's kind of scheduled, and they want to keep both guys game ready. So this is his opportunity. It's in divisional and an opportunity for him to kind of cement himself a little bit, I guess, against the Minnesota Wild, because you never know what might happen when it comes to a team like that. They're only playing 4 times this year between Minnesota and Winnipeg, not the usual 5. But in saying that, could it be that chance here where you run a guy? Well, for sure. But at the same time, I think that at this stage of the season, where we're not even into the second full month, that Paul's also kind of weighing right now the ability to keep both guys game ready and not just quite yet to anoint anybody the super number one guy and the guy that you're going to run with on consecutive games, and not just, you know, 2 or 3, 5, 6, 7, and 8.
Paul, always appreciate your time. Thanks for doing this. Enjoy your day.
My pleasure. Go Cubs. Talk to you guys later.
Thanks, Paulie. Take care, man.
Go Cubs. Go Cubs.
Okay, with the Cubs fighting for a little while.
Yeah. NHL News and Notes is next on the Royal Sports Power Hour on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Not AutoCorp present the Blue Bus. Before every Winnipeg Blue Bombers home game this season, we're taking W fans to Investors Group Field in our Not AutoCorp VIP Blue Bus. We'll pick you up and drop you off at the Not AutoCorp VIP tent to tailgate before the game. Then after all the football activities, take you back to wherever you started. Prize includes 6 tickets to an upcoming Blue Bombers home game and free transportation to and from. To enter, simply go to tsn1290.ca, and we'll try and get you to the next Blue Bomber home game with the good people at Not AutoCorp and their VIP Blue Bus. NHL news and notes time, gentlemen. And last night, Jeff Carter of the LA Kings was cut by a skate, and he's now expected out for several weeks. Your thoughts on the Kings this year and how everything's gone and how this affects them going forward without Jeff Carter?
And they're undefeated, right? 5-0-1. No one really saw that they would jump out of the gate like this. Of course, losing Carter is massive for them, but a little bit shocking, man. You're talking about a team scoring 21 goals so far, a team that looked like they were drowning a fairly quick death last year as far as being able to keep up with some of the changes in the league. And I'm not so sure that many envision them, right? 3.5 goals a game is what they're averaging scoring right now. So of all the things you look at and you go, well, that's going to come back, you would think that the Los Angeles Kings would fit into that realm of, well, it's early, right? The old it's early thing, maybe apply that to the Kings as much as anyone.
The Kings averaged 3.5 goals per playoff series when they won the Stanley Cup. So that's why this is shocking to me. I mean, There is the whole new coach, new GM, new, like, almost like a fresh start for a lot of these guys. I've been maybe the most surprised by, I assumed Kopitar would kind of revert back to his normal dominant self, but Dustin Brown's having a heck of a start to the season.
Impossible start.
Right? Like a guy that everybody thought was dead and done with, and the Kings were trying to get rid of him for a few years now. So I think there's certainly a level of hesitancy on crowning this team just yet as a reborn cup contender. But I have them as a playoff team. I think they'll still be able to do that as the season goes along. And right now, a lot of their youth is starting to step up. And the Swede, Adrian Kempe, yesterday had a hat trick. And that's what they were missing the past couple of years, was having some youngsters step in and produce offensively.
I think specifically last night, you look at that game with the Canadiens, and it's for me, it's not the Kings that I gravitated towards. Mm. It was like the Canadiens, like, holy cow.
Well, that's where I was going to go next. The flip side of the LA Kings is they beat the Montreal Canadiens last night, 1-5-1, and 3 points to start the season, and dead last with the Rangers in the East. What happens here in Montreal? We'll talk with that about David Pagnotta with that at 8:30. But where does this go? It's not going to go well. Like, even if Carey Price starts playing better, they can't score goals.
Yeah, and it's not like the thing though to really keep in mind. It's not like they're not getting shots on net. Right, 37 yesterday, 72 directed towards the net. I saw a stat for their overall team shooting percentage is hovering around 4%, I believe, right now, which is just impossibly low. So you would think that breaks through at some point in time. Now, that doesn't solve their problems defensively, but at some point in time, the goals have got to start pouring into the net for them.
Yeah, because it looks like the process is fairly sound right now. They're just getting no luck at everything. It's just like an avalanche going against them right now. But to be fair, how many times in the past 3-4 seasons did they start off the year 10-1? And they're ripping off 3-4 goals a game, and then all of a sudden everything dries up by the time the middle of the season comes along. So I know it's a different temperature in Montreal. I'm not really as concerned about their offense. I look at that blue line, though, yep, and you got a bunch of plotters out there, and I just don't know if that's going to fly the way the NHL is constructed right now. So a lot of people are going to basically beg Marc Bergevin to make a move to get a center. I think the better move would be to get a defenseman.
Yeah, it's not going well in Montreal. And the Rangers as well. And there's some teams that, again, it's still early. I'll see what it's like in 10 or 15 games for most teams. But there are some questions going on around with some of the teams that have been perennial playoff teams the past couple of seasons. We'll take a break and talk some football. Plenty more hockey talk in the next hour as well. Josh Morrissey is going to join us right before 9 o'clock. David Pagnotta is going to join us in your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas. But up next, we talk some NFL with Coach Jeff Reinbold on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Hour 3 of The Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. 1 hour away from your phone calls on the Boston Pizza fan line at 780-1290. Josh Morrissey, Jets defenseman, is also going to join us at 8:45 this morning. David Pagnotta at the bottom of the hour to talk some more NHL and your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas coming up. This next segment is brought to you by Olympic Homes. I'm going to talk some football. Thursday Nighter, week 7 in the National Football League. gets underway with a good one. Kansas City Chiefs on the road in Oakland to take on the Raiders. And we'll delve into that and much more on the NFL. This is just coming out today, though. The Dallas Morning News is reporting that Ezekiel Elliott and the NFL are in discussions to come to an agreement on a settlement, or at least have discussed coming up with some sort of settlement. Of course, Ezekiel Elliott, given the six-game suspension, he's been fighting it all season long. He got another reprieve, I guess is what I'll call it, for at least 14 days until they review his appeal once again. And now the two sides are at least having discussed or are discussing a possible settlement.
A lot of this talk with Elliott for in this domestic violence, it was six games he was handed down, right?
Yeah.
And you know, the NFL has their own sort of staff of ex-FBI guys and gals and things like that. Like, they get pretty involved in the investigations. I go way back to the Ben Roethlisberger. Remember years ago when Ben Roethlisberger was suspended for six games? For an incident that happened.
Was it six games for him?
Yeah, it was, man. And that's
he's had multiple.
Way back, yeah. And so just the severity. And that was another incident where the police were not involved, but they did all their own work and came to that for something that was a pretty detailed account of what unfolded. And I keep going back to that sort of as the start or the baseline for this in the first real serious that I can recall anyway. Suspension handed down for conduct unbecoming of the badge. And a lot of people forget about that whole thing with Roethlisberger and going back a bit.
Look, I think they need to get this done and dealt with and move on. I think, like most things with the National Football League, it drags on and on and on. However, are you okay with the NFL talking settlement after everything they've sort of, like, wouldn't you rather a league stand up and go, you can keep fighting this all you want, but we don't believe in what you're accused of, and we're standing pat on our decision. I understand it needs to go away. It looks awful on everybody involved, but I'm not sure I like the fact that after everything the league has done and gone through, that they would be willing, and maybe they aren't. Maybe Ezekiel said, can we talk? They talked, and the NFL said no. They've just had discussions on a possible settlement. Maybe they're not, but if they turn around and go, okay, we've agreed on four games, I have a problem with that if you're the National Football League.
Yeah, I just wish that somehow it would be found where the PA, there was more walking hand in hand, and I know that someone needs to represent the player. But I like maybe it's that the PA could do their own investigative study into it, similar to the way the league does. And if the PA itself finds that there were indiscretions or thing unbecoming and all the rest of it, there could be more unison in delivering. I don't know if justice is the proper word, but in at least handing down these penalties and suspensions where there's not so much friction and almost that the players would own up to the indiscretions and what they get and how they get into trouble. It's just really unfortunate.
We're going to talk some NFL and specifically Week 7 with our good friend, former CFL coach and now analyst for the NFL and Sky Sports in the UK, Mr. Jeff Reinbold. Coach, welcome back. How are you?
I'm great, fellas. Aloha from London today.
You have a game there this week.
Yeah, we've got the Cardinals and the Rams come in, and Cardinals are already here. They've been here since Monday. The Rams fly in on Friday and play on Sunday, so it's going to be interesting to see how that works out.
Coach, I want to ask you right out of the gate, man, maybe for sure one of the most disappointing or perplexing teams this year, they've got to be the Oakland Raiders. Checking them out, 30th. In yards per game, they are offensively, and I believe it's 23rd defensively that they're allowing. Why are the Oakland Raiders struggling to the degree that they are?
Well, I think there's a couple things, Troy. First of all, you know, the first two games when Carr was healthy, they averaged over 30 points a game. After he got hurt, and then last week in his first game back, they've only averaged 13. So that tells you right there, number one, how important he is to their offense. The other thing, as you look at them, everybody keeps waiting for Marshawn Lynch to make an impact. And the Raiders have gone backwards, actually, in terms of number of touches that he's had. He was right around 18 or 20 in the first couple games. And last week, it's gotten down to 13. He's a guy, as you guys know, that thrives on work, and he has to have the ball, you know, multiple times. He's very much like Adrian Peterson and Fournette in that regard. He's a big, strong back that wears down defenses, but you can't wear down a defense if you're not getting touches. And then defensively, it's really a struggle because Khalil Mack is trying to do everything he can and really is still an effective pass rusher, but they're just getting not getting any help inside, and they're not very good against the run, and they don't tackle very well in the secondary, so that's not a real good recipe for winning football games.
What's going on with Amari Cooper? And I say that because I know all players struggle. All players have their ups and downs. But his lack of production and his drops this year are alarming to me for a stud receiver like himself.
Well, I think he's kind of a microcosm of the Raiders, if you will, in that they're very talented. This is a team that has one of the top five offensive lines in all of football. They got a great young quarterback. They got, you know, receivers outside that are long and are productive normally. And they've got speed and athletes on defense, and there's something missing. You just don't see them playing. They're 2-4, fellas, and I'm telling you, if they lose tonight against Kansas City, and I think they will, if they lose against Kansas City, going 2-5 in a division with the Chiefs and the Broncos and the Chargers, who've already, you know, beaten them, that's tough. That's tough sledding.
Coach, I'm excited. And that Teddy Bridgewater's coming back, man. That was a horrific injury that he suffered. And according to their backup quarterback, Kyle Sloter, Bridgewater was actually in practice with the first team a little bit yesterday. If Teddy Bridgewater comes back, how dangerous do the Vikings become?
Well, I think the Vikings are dangerous already, Troy, because they can play defense. And when you substitute the number 12 equation out of the NFC Central, I'm talking about Aaron Rodgers' injury, then really I think they are they're the lead dog in that race because of the fact they can play defense. And defense always keeps you in games. I think that would certainly be a benefit. I think, and Troy, you know as well as I do that in the game there are certain guys that can bring a team emotional lift when they come back. And after guys seeing what they saw, and it was such a horrific injury in practice that, you know, guys turned away and threw up. I mean, that's how bad that thing was. And for them to now see him come back in the huddle and stand in the pocket and take shots and deliver the football, I think that's going to be a huge emotional lift to a team that, to me, should win. Now, if they stay healthy and go the course, I think they should win the NFC Central.
Jeff, as a coach, how would you handle the injury to Aaron Rodgers? What would you be doing this week? And then, you know, they may make a trade, they may not. But how would you handle it going into the game this weekend?
Well, you know, this is the topic that, you know, all coaches ought to talk about, right? This is kind of like one of those test tube experiment things. When you become so reliant on one player, as they are, and so really one-dimensional. Their running game is just kind of an afterthought. I mean, you got Ty Montgomery, who's a receiver, as your lead back. You know, it's really difficult if that guy is reduced from the equation. Now, I'm going to give you guys a stat. This is almost incredible, really. In 1992, Don Majkowski was a quarterback in Green Bay, and he got hurt. In came Brett Favre. Since that time, 1992 till the present day, only 9 games in that entire stretch, playoffs, regular season, the whole deal, only 9 games has anybody other than Aaron Rodgers or Brett Favre quarterback the Green Bay Packers. So this is like uncharted territory for this football team. And then on top of it, the relationship that he has, the interaction that he has, the trust that he has from Jordy Nelson and Adams and all of those guys, you can't make that up in a week. And then factor on top of it again the fact that Hundley he's talented but hasn't had very many reps. You got to try and find things that you can do as a football team that take the pressure off of that position. The defense is going to have to understand that they've got to create short fields and turnovers. They can't give up big plays and get behind early because you don't want him to have to, you know, throw from behind. And the special teams are going to have to do their part too. So if the Packers are going to come out of this thing, it's going to take, you know, it's like they say, it takes a whole village to raise a child. Well, it's going to take all 53 doing their thing for them to have a chance.
Coach, I've seen the Browns are going back to DeShone Kizer to start again this weekend. And, The Browns in this eternal search for their long-term answer at quarterback. What's your take on the situation in Cleveland?
You know what? I think they ought to just go hire Moses because, I mean, they wandered around in the desert for how long, and then he finally figured out a way to get out of there. Well, that's really what the Browns have been doing with quarterbacks. I mean, it's amazing. And you look at the guys that they've passed on for the guys that they've drafted and or signed or whatever, and it's really tough for Browns fans. And I think this is an interesting thing. They are at the tipping point, in my opinion, because at 0-6 and the lack of success the last 2 years, they instituted the Moneyball concept, and I think that's the way they have to go. But what happens, Troy, is do you have the resolve? Do you have the commitment? Do you have the toughness as an organization that it takes to continue on the path? Now, if you blow it all up again, right, and then they fire Hugh and they fire Sashi and they bring a whole new regime in, here we go again, another cycle of starting over. What makes it tough for teams like the Browns is when you watch the team that's coming in here to play in London on Sunday, the Rams be 4-2 with a 30-year-old head coach and a quarterback, that is only in his second year. And so that's where the fan base and ownership and management, and the coaches and the football players, everybody's got to be on the same page. And, when it gets tough, that's when the cracks in the dam start to appear. And when there's cracks in the dam, pretty soon, it's going to cave in. And so I'm hopeful for the Browns that they get some traction and some positive results.
Jeff Reinbold talking some NFL with us this morning on the Big Show, TSN 1290, 16 minutes past the hour. Atlanta's in New England, Super Bowl rematch. Teams are much different than in the Super Bowl, but what do you expect in that one, Coach?
I think Atlanta's going to bounce back. Everybody, they had to collapse 17-0 up on the Dolphins at home, and you end up, it was like a replay of the Super Bowl. They lose 20-17 in overtime. I have an awful lot of faith in Dan Quinn's ability to send the right message to his football team. That's one of his strengths as a coach. There's going to be a tremendous amount of emotion in this game for the Falcons. They have to play well. They need to bounce back from last week. They got a chance to. This is an opportunity to get that Super Bowl thing out of their mouth a little bit. When you look at the Patriots, and Jim, I'm telling you, I watched them very, very close against the Jets, and they are doing some things that are very un-Patriot-like. I mean, you watch them defensively, and they can't rush the passer very well. I mean, you got Kyle Van Noten and guys rushing that off the edge. Hightower's really not an edge rusher. I mean, he's a linebacker trying to do it. They can't get pressure inside. And then, again, the fundamental things that they've always done so well: keep the quarterback in the pocket, play, tackle well, don't give up huge chunk plays. In the fourth quarter, they're trying to protect a 10-point lead, and McCown gets out of the pocket, and there's guys running free without anybody within 25 yards of them. That's just not Patriot football. So they've still got some work to do. But again, I think as long as you got 12 throwing to 87, you got a pretty good chance.
We appreciate your time as always, Coach. Great stuff. Enjoy the games this weekend, and especially the one in the UK.
All right, guys. Thanks. We'll talk next week.
Mahalo, Coach. Thanks, man.
All right. Aloha.
Your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas is next, and this segment was a presentation of Olympic Homes, the ready-to-move specialist. Tour their homes in person or online at olympichomes.ca. This is The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Twelfth caller through at 780-1290 will be our latest qualifier as redtag.ca and TSN 1290 presents Hockey Nights in Vegas, sending two more lucky listeners, a grand total of five, and their guests to Las Vegas this November. Will they see the Winnipeg Jets take on the Vegas Golden Knights Friday, November 10th at T-Mobile Arena? Two tickets to the Jets and Golden Knights on the 10th at their home arena. Free parking at Winnipeg-Richardson International Airport, courtesy of Park and Fly. Return airfare to and from Sin City. Four nights accommodations right on the strip at the MGM Grand. And $1,290 in cash to help cover a few extras during your stay. Listen for your chance to qualify and win weekdays at 7:15 a.m., 8:15 a.m. on The Big Show, 12:15 p.m. on the Don Vito Roundtable with Kevin Olszewski, and 5:15 p.m. with Hustler and Rick Ralph on The Afternoon Ride. You can also watch for bonus chances to qualify online as well on our social media, specifically the TSN 1290 Facebook page. Winners will be announced Monday mornings right here on The Big Show. Next grand prize announcement coming up on Monday, October the 23rd, and then our final one coming up on November the 6th. All the information is at tsn1290.ca. Hockey Nights in Vegas, presented by redtag.ca, where Canada shops for great travel deals, and us here at TSN 1290. As Brandon gets to the 12th caller through, I want to ask you, Daron Carter is going to play DB for the Saskatchewan Roughriders this weekend, as well as receiver in Calgary. And I saw Bo Levi Mitchell tweet at Daron Carter saying, "Don't do it, Daron. 25 balls your way, minimum."
And then, of course, Carter responds back, "Yeah, we'll get your chasing cleats on if you're going to chuck my way because I can catch." It's going to... And supposedly this was all done before the fracas that happened a few days ago here. This was a decision that Chris Jones had already made. I believe that Daron Carter has gone out a couple times already and played a few plays as a corner and contributed to some degree in the secondary. But if he's going to be out there for an extended period of time, that's going to be worth tuning in and watching for sure.
Yeah. When was the last receiver? Was it Brown in New England? The receiver
That's right, Troy Brown.
Troy Brown played like pretty good defensive back.
Played in the slot.
Like he basically converted, right? Yeah. At that point, yeah. Hey, man, he might be capable of it. You know, I'm not going to sit here and laugh at him and say he's going to fail miserably or anything like that. I mean, he's a pretty imposing figure. He's very physical. That's a part of him as a receiver that I've always enjoyed watching the most. And he knows all the tricks of the trade. He might pull it off, man.
I would also say you don't see 6'5 DBs for a reason, though. So,
well, I think why you don't, Wicks, is because I don't think that there's any real specific reason. Typically, if you can catch, right, the difference between offense and defense from being a DB or a receiver is typically whether or not you can catch for a lot of guys.
True, but right? does he have the hips? Is he able to move in and out like that? And I'd also be curious of whether or not he can cover a quick guy, too, in those short areas. I hope Bo Levi throws 20 straight at him. I hope they just throw at him all game long.
Sounds personal, Wicks.
It ain't personal, man. I call it like I see it.
Our 12th caller through and qualifier today is...
It's Daryl Wiley.
Daryl Wiley.
Wild one, Wiley.
Congratulations. You're our latest qualifier for Hockey Nights in Vegas. You're in for our next two grand prize draws on the 23rd and the 6th. And, of course, just for doing so, you get a Jets Gear gift card. I wanted to run this, so I'll be quick with it. Here's Paul Maurice talking about having his team play with more speed after the Columbus loss.
Right, so there's a difference, right? You don't have to be a fast skater to play quickly, you know. So mental is a big part of it, right? Make your read. So the practice today was simple. There weren't a whole lot of reads in it. Make your read as fast as you can and then go. So there's a lot of really good NHL players that aren't fast but play quick. You know, they get to it in a straightaway foot race. There wouldn't be a whole lot of guys catching some of our guys or any team. Everybody's got three or four guys that can really go. But there's some guys out there that don't have great feet that get to where they need to get to, and they play quick. And it's a lot of it is just habit, you know, is getting out there and run your route short. So it was a lot of sprint work in practice today with pucks. About, we're doing one thing here, do it as fast as you possibly can. Worry less about slowing down to let the play develop. We've been slowing down to let the play develop. It won't develop in this league, right? This is all about speed now. So just kind of changing your starting point, what you think you should do with the puck. We got to get this thing going north faster and get galloping.
Paul Maurice discussing team speed or getting playing faster. with his team. We'll hear from Josh Morrissey in the next half hour, but up next, David Pagnotta talks NHL with us on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Our province is packed with shining stars in the world of sports, and every week TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. You can nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer, all those fine people who make sport happen across our province, who is dedicated to making their sport matter as well. Every Friday on The Big Show, we'll showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca to nominate your sports star, and we could be featuring them very soon, including on tomorrow's Big Show, and get some deserving participant or nominee a $50 gift card from our good friends at Subway. Eat fresh. Josh Morrissey, Winnipeg Jets defenseman, is going to join us in the next segment. Talk about the Columbus loss and what he expects heading into the weekend divisional battle tomorrow against Minnesota. This is Jim Toth, Troy West, and Brandon Ruicki with you on The Big Show at TSN 1290. And, of course, an hour of your phone calls at the top of the hour as well on the Boston Pizza fan line. Right now we're going to continue the hockey talk with our good friend, Mr. David Pagnotta of thefourthperiod.com. How are you, David?
Not bad. Better than some people out east in the province of Quebec.
Well, but that's a great...
Other than that, I'm okay.
Great segue, because that's where I was going to start. What do you do in Montreal?
You relax. This team is all over the place. Absolutely all over the place. There's been zero consistency with the defensive pairings. There's been zero consistency with the forward units. This team is all over the place, and I understand Claude Julien is trying and has been trying over the course of the preseason and these first seven games the Habs have had to start the year, disastrous games for the most part, to create some kind of unit, some kind of pairings and groupings that'll work and that'll click. But he's juggling lines on a game-to-game, in-game basis, and unless you're putting these guys together for an extended period of time, it's going to be a mess there. And, and I'm not even talking about the forward core, just the blue line itself. Trying to figure out who's going to pair with who, how they're going to come out of the zone and then let the offensive guys do their thing. This is, the Canadians, for the most part, have had a history over the last few years of having guys that have scored in bunches and then gotten on ridiculously, poor cold streaks, like Max Pacioretty, who has one goal this season, like Brendan Gallagher, one goal this season, Alex Galchenyuk, one goal this season. Those guys will eventually get things going. And if you're going to go for it all from an offensive standpoint, and you're going to put Pacioretty, Jonathan Drouin, and Galchenyuk together on one line, then you've got to let that ride for a few games so that they can build some chemistry in in-game situations. The offense will eventually come. It's pretty ugly right now. They're 1.4 goals per game, which is pretty bad. But for the most part, it's that stuff will come. For the most part, it's just trying to figure out the rest of their plan of attack, because it's just everything is shuffled, everything's juggled all over the place, and unless you have consistency, it's not gonna work. And I get what he's been trying to do, what Claude Julien has been trying to do, but now it's time to just let the guys roll with whatever units you come up with, and without that consistency, it's just not gonna happen. The Habs are lucky; they've got one more game against. On this road trip against Anaheim on Friday, another team that's been struggling to score goals. They're averaging two a game. They haven't scored on the power play yet. Them and the Islanders, the only teams to not do that. But after that, they've got a four-day break when they head home. So get through Friday, regroup over the course of that, over that break. You're going to get beaten in practice, but you've got to regroup and get things going. This is a team that needs to just go back to the basics and relax.
David, what are your own personal thoughts on the situation with Galchenyuk? And going forward, do you think that the Canadians and Galchenyuk work things out here?
I think so. I mean, from the get-go, Claude Julien is a guy that he's going to pick a few players that he wants to see excel, but he's going to pick on them and just drive them into the ground on a consistent basis. That's really the only thing that's been consistent with the Habs this season, is how he's been treating some of their guys. And it's not in a negative fashion. It's just trying to get them to prove that they need to step up. They need to take that next step in their careers. And yes, people that have, you know, played for players that have played for Julien in the past, he does this. Once you get in that, you know, once you're kind of that guy, not so much a whipping boy, but just a guy that he wants to focus on because he sees certain things in you, that unless you're doing the extra things, the little things, you know, away from game situations, if you're excelling a little bit more in practice, and that's what, you know, those are the kinds of things that they want to see from Alex Galchenyuk. And he's starting to do that. He's starting to get the message. You know, him, you know, moving back up to the first line with Drouin Pacioretty isn't necessarily, you know, a result of him doing what Claude Julien has wanted. It's a result of necessity. But at the same time, you know, having to build to see if that line can work together. I think the Canadians will, you know, depending on obviously how Galchenyuk responds long term, will be okay in that situation. They're not actively shopping him. They haven't been actively shopping him over the course of the preseason. They've been listening, but not going out there and telling all 30 other teams that he's readily available. The Canadians have liked what they've seen in Alex Galchenyuk. They just need to understand what type of player he is. Now he's moving over to the right side. Is he going to be the number one, you know, first line right winger for the Canadians versus in the past where it was, is he a left winger? Is he a center? So, and he can play pretty much any position, but now again, just consistency, keep him on that unit. If that's going to be his line going forward, then get them together, allow them to play together in game situations on a, you know, 4 or 5 game basis and go from there.
David Pignata, thefourthperiod.com, joining us on the big show today, TSN 1290, 38 minutes past the hour. Jets defenseman Josh Morrissey is going to join us in our next segment, and of course, an hour of your phone calls. David, couple teams right at the cap, couple just below it, and then there's a bunch of teams with some players that probably should be in the NHL that are in the minors. What are you hearing overall, in general, about any potential trade movement, and do you expect any in the next week, 2 weeks, month?
You know, usually this time of year, you know, you don't hear too much. There's a little bit more chatter, and there has been a little bit more chatter since the start of the season. Obviously, a lot of it kind of starts with Vegas. And the blue line and what's going on in the back end there. There are some teams that are looking for, you know, some to bolster their back end a little bit. There's some teams that want to tinker. And there are some teams that have, you know, some defensemen, some other defensemen available. But they're kind of just watching George McPhee, their GM, Vegas' GM, to see what kind of direction he's going to go in. The guy's got 10 NHL defensemen on his roster. You know, one of them's injured right now in Clayton Stoner. But, you know, 9 other guys, they want to bring Shea Theodore up from the AHL. They're, you know, they've had the flexibility of sending him down without having to clear waivers. So it's been a bit of a, you know, a bit of a gift for them where they don't have to potentially lose another guy. But, you know, push comes to shove in the next week or two, they're going to have to do something. They want the kid up. And these calls are starting to percolate a little bit more in terms of some of their defensemen, whether it's a Jason Garrison or a Braden McNabb or Lucas Pisa, who's actually been playing pretty well for the Knights. And might generate a bit of a higher return or at least more interest in some fashion. I think it starts, at least from a defensive perspective, I think it starts with Vegas, who they're going to move out, which players. It could be one, could be two guys. And then you see what's going to happen within, you know, kind of the rest of the league. And some of these starts that some of these teams are on, whether it's L.A., who's, you know, best start of, in franchise history right now at 5-0-1, or the, you know, a team like the New Jersey Devils, who are surprising at 5-1, that have some other holes that they'd like to fill. These are teams that are keeping an eye on the situation and seeing what's happening in Vegas. Because I'm not saying we're going to see a potential domino effect with multiple moves happening, but it will, you know, it will start to get the ball rolling a little bit more for some of these other clubs once Vegas kind of figures out what the heck's going on that blue line.
David, are you buying the resurgence in La La Land?
They look good. They really do. And, you know, this is talking to a few of the players over the last week, you hear it in their voices. You know, I haven't been down there yet, but, you know, talking to a few guys, you hear it in their voices and how they're kind of, you know, they're a lot more upbeat. It's a different mentality in the room in Los Angeles. You know, Daryl Sutter, as good of a coach as he is, really just beat down on that team towards the end and really in their 2014 Stanley Cup run as well. But from there on, it was just a consistent beatdown for them. And hockey wasn't, I guess you could say hockey wasn't fun anymore in Los Angeles. And, you know, there's a reason why Jordan Nolan wanted out. There's a reason why they made a bunch of changes over the course, you know, of the offseason, and kind of went back to basics a little bit, bringing in John Stevens, promoting him to head coach, and just changing the atmosphere kind of in the room. And, you know, one of the guys, you see it right off the bat, has been Dustin Brown. You saw it in preseason and in these first few games for the six games for the Kings. Different player, back to the first line, back alongside Ange Kopitar, which Kopitar is welcomed to have a guy that he's familiar with on that first line. And you're given a guy like Dustin Brown 20 minutes a game to play in all situations, something that he's excelled at, you know, especially in 2011 through 2014 during their cup runs. This was a team that, you know, certainly needed their former captain to get going, and he's done that. And you're seeing a little bit of offense kind of spreading. Alex Iafallo, who's a rookie, who's playing on that first line, hasn't put up the numbers, but he's been creating a ton of offensive chances for the Kings. And that's been the key for them. They're one of the best defensive teams in the National Hockey League, still are. They're currently first in the league in goals against. But they needed their offense to get going a little bit more. And with Brown and with Iafallo creating chances, and with, you know, that 70s line with Carter, and I guess we'll see how long he's going to be out of action. He will miss action with what appears to be a cut on his Achilles, but we'll get some official word on that later today, and that's going to be a bit of a hit. But with Tanner Pearson and Tyler Toffoli, and now Adrian Kempe, who came out, scored a hat trick yesterday against the Canadiens, if they can spread that offense around, and Jonathan Quick remains on his head, and Drew Doughty continues to shine on that back end like he has so far this season, we could see this team, you know, back into contender status, which, you know, if you're a fan of the Kings, you like to see it. But they're getting their little things right and contributions from every angle. I want to see how long that happens. And if we're seeing that after the 20-game mark, then I think we've got a real deal situation in L.A.
David, we here in Winnipeg like to keep our eye on a team called the Jets, and we've literally seen a little bit of everything this year, good and bad, and it's only been six games. I'm wondering what your take on the first six games for Winnipeg has been.
Different situation than the Montreal Canadiens, but when I look at the Jets, I just look for consistency. And we're starting to see it, and we have started to see it a little bit more, you know, over, I guess, the last 7 to 10 days a little bit. You know, we're seeing some offense from, you know, obviously, you know, the usual suspects and that sort of thing. And when you have Ehlers playing, you know, consistently well, he's got 5 goals and 7 points so far. Shifley and Wheeler, you know, getting things going. Line A will get to his elite status soon enough. But they're kind of spreading things out a little bit, which is good to see. And eventually, like I said, Line A will you know, get to the forefront of the offense and help lead the charge from that perspective. But you know, for this team, it's been consistency and it's been the goaltending. And if we see the back end contributing a little bit more and bailing out the goaltender, whoever it's going to be, on a consistent basis in Winnipeg, I think the jury's still out right now on what's going to happen. But this is a team that I expected to compete for a playoff spot this season. I think a lot of people did because of the amount of young quality depth and offensive depth that they have up front. We just got to see it on a consistent basis, and we've got to see the defensive game be a little more structured and strong. And it's getting there. It's only six games in. But so far, you get that rust off right off the bat, and you kind of, you know, build off of that and propel yourself forward, you know, knowing that you've kind of, shook off some of the cobwebs and some of that rust. We see more consistency from this club over these next, I'd say, 5, 6, 7 games. And, you know, similar to Los Angeles, from what I want to see from them, if they can keep that going on a consistent basis, say hit the 20-game mark and they're still, you know, performing at an elite level where they're spreading out the offense and sharing the responsibility, same thing in Winnipeg. You see that happening. You hit that 20-game mark and you're seeing that, even if they're, you know, in the same position they are right now, which is just on the outside of the playoffs, it's still very early on in the season. Hockey has a way, NHL more so than anything, has a way of evening things out. And you know, if you're a team that's hot off the bat and you're not supposed to be, you're going to kind of come down to earth later on in the season. If you're playing consistently, a team that's supposed to compete for a playoff spot, that's going to propel you forward later on in the season. You just need to have that consistency going over those, you know, 15, first 15, 20 games. And I think the Jets, from what I've been seeing, they got those cobwebs off early. We're starting to see that better performance on a more regular basis. You're not going to win every night. You can't do that in the National Hockey League. But if you do those little things, if you spread the wealth around, it's going to lead to good things. And, you know, so far from an offensive perspective, so far so good. Just got to lock in that defensive core structure of that team with the goaltender, and then I think they'll be pretty good.
David, great stuff. We appreciate your time. Have a great day.
All right, you too, guys.
Thanks so much, David. Take care, man.
Jets defenseman Josh Morrissey joins us next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you. The Boss Pizza fan line will be open at 9 o'clock for an hour of your phone calls. Right now, we welcome back into the program Jets defenseman Josh Morrissey. Good morning, Josh. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Good, thank you.
Excellent. How was practice yesterday after that 5-2 loss to Columbus? Paul Maurice was saying he was working on some speed things.
Yeah, it was great. You know what, obviously, you know, it was a tough one for us against Columbus, and you know, we wanted to get back to work yesterday, and I thought just that. I mean, when we watched video in the morning and looked at some of the film, I thought we were just doing a lot of things a lot slower than we're capable of doing, and that we had been doing the prior three games. And so yesterday we really tried to do everything at the highest possible pace, and I think that'll be the theme again here today and going into the game against Minnesota.
Josh, can you maybe expand on, I really like when Paul Maurice explains or talks about speed and how it's not simply just a physical skill, but if you utilize anticipation in the correct way on the ice, that can actually give you speed in your first or second step happening quicker because you're able to think the game quicker.
Totally. I think it starts from being mentally sharp. I don't think we were extremely sharp in that game, and so I think that's where it begins. Obviously, then you know, when you're sharp, you're taking better angles to the puck. There's less bobbled pucks. It just seems obviously like we're cleaner with our puck movement and crisper. So, for example, a defenseman going back for the puck, you know, corralling that puck just smoother, obviously, in one motion perhaps, and moving the puck, you know, before anyone's on him. And then the puck receiver always having his feet moving, obviously. And, you know, you just create speed that way by moving before you get the puck and moving the puck quickly and on the tape and, you know, giving guys good, clean, hard, crisp passes. And then again, also from skating and being hard on the forecheck, things like that, and just running the proper routes with speed. I think all of those things help to generate speed. And also, I think starting offensive zone time with shots on the net, retrieving pucks in the corners, and generating that attack that way.
Pretty clear, as most of you and Coach Maurice have said, that it wasn't the game you wanted overall against Columbus. But when you play a team like Columbus and see how they played, you can see why that's probably the thing, that the consistency in a game throughout three periods that you yourselves want to get to.
Well, definitely. I mean, you know, obviously that was we don't play Columbus very often, but they played us very hard that night. And, you know, so every team's got their things that they're working on. I'm sure they have things they're working on as well. But definitely, they came at us very hard for three periods, and not unlike we had been doing in the prior three games. So for us, I think we know how to get to that level and play at that level of intensity for 60 minutes. It's just a matter of being able to do that, you know, not three games in a row or a couple games in a row here and there, but being able to do that on a night-in, night-out basis.
Josh, just, I suppose, coincidence, but the level of struggle in front of Steve Mason in the games that he's played from an overall team defensive standpoint has been challenging, I think, for a guy like Steve Mason. And when you, like, after the game and stuff like that, when he's being sort of, you know, inundated to the degree that he is with some of the things in front of him. Your thoughts on how Steve Mason maybe is handling some of these situations in front of him?
Well, I mean, first of all, he's handling everything amazing. Steve's a pro. He's been around the NHL for a long time now, and he's just being the ultimate teammate and pro, obviously, through a tough couple first games where, you know, you look at the tape, we didn't help him out at all, and last night we didn't help him out, or a couple nights ago we didn't help him out at all as well. I think you look at a lot of those goals, and you know, every goalie, just by the nature of their competitive drive, is going to want a couple of them back, but that's not on him. I think a lot of those are on the defensive structure that we had and didn't have in a lot of those situations. So, I feel for Steve, I think as a defenseman, as a defense group, and then as an entire team, you know, obviously first and foremost comes winning and losing, but at the same time, you know, when you have a guy come in and as nice of a guy as Steve is, as well as he's just seamlessly come into the locker room, you know, and with a new organization and new team, you know, you definitely feel some of that responsibility on your shoulders because, again, you look at the tape, so many of those goals aren't on Steve. So, but like I said, he's handled it like a true professional. You know, he's come to the rink every day. He's worked just as hard the next day in practice or harder, and he's been a great teammate as well. So he's going to get it going. I mean, obviously, we got to get it going in front of him, but we're super confident in both Steve and Helly and in our goaltenders, and a lot of that, you know, their play and their numbers honestly come from what's in front of them. So we have to do a better job of helping Steve out specifically.
You bring him a latte to practice? Just go, hey, Steve, here you go, buddy.
Well, we sit next to each other in the dressing room, so maybe I'll have to do that, actually. That's a good idea.
Hey, Josh, we appreciate your time again this week. Thanks for doing this, and all the best against Minnesota tomorrow night.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Josh.
Jets defenseman Josh Morrissey right before the Boss Pizza fan line. It's open, anything and everything, at 780-1290 next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca, The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki in the Boss Pizza fan line. 780-1290 is open. Jets talk, as we just heard from Josh Morrissey, and of course, some of Paul Maurice's comments after practice yesterday. We were delving into the Blue Bombers. We're taking your Gord Downie memories, if you want to share those. We were talking about the passing of the tragically hip front man at the age of 53. Two nights ago, the news came out yesterday, and a night ago, and anything and everything else that we want to get into, the Major League Baseball playoffs, and of course, Jerron Carter is going to play defensive back, it looks like, for the Riders this weekend in Calgary against the Stampeders. 780-1290, Floyd, you're kicking us off today on the Boss Pizza fan line. Go ahead.
Good morning to the Big Show.
How are you?
Oh, very good. How are you all?
Fine, thank you.
I'll just make sure my radio is off. Yeah, it's off. I want to start with Steve Mason. Morrissey just put together a nice little talk on the new player in town, and I understand that you can't throw somebody who's not got their confidence going under the bus, but I'm a fan, so I can do it. And I'm throwing him under the bus because I'm seeing a player that's not very confident, he's not square to the puck, and he leaves himself open for an acrobatic response to a shot, and he doesn't have that kind of athleticism. So I really see a problem still in net.
Can you say that for the first three goals you witnessed in that game against Columbus?
Well, I have to say the Columbus game was a little bit different, but I'm looking at the times he was chased from Toronto and Calgary.
I don't know what more to say about this, Floyd. I I honestly don't know what Steve Mason is, because the defensive zone coverage and the tap-ins on the back door was wide open again after three games against Columbus. And the back door wasn't even, I think, partially closed against Toronto and Calgary for Steve Mason. And with that being said, I think he made some outstanding saves in all three of those games. So to sit here and say he's not athletic or he doesn't have it or he's not confident, I don't see that. I see him making some big saves, and I see him being hung out to dry. So I'm not going to sit here and say he's been outstanding. I'm just saying he's done what I expected to do, given the circumstances of what's been in front of him, in my opinion.
That's a fair analysis. That is a fair analysis. I'm not as technical as maybe your analysis, but that's what I see. Oh, and we said we can open up for any other comment. I would like to see both the CFL and the NFL take a NCAA football at headshots. The players that I've seen ejected from the game for targeting have been very professional about it, really. They pick up their helmet, they look at their teammates, and they go off the field. And I think it's keeping the NCAA game a lot safer for the quarterback.
That's a good point. Interesting. Your thoughts on that?
Do you have the same rule? Is that what he's saying?
Yeah, I think what Floyd means there is that in the NCAA, there's the targeting rule. And so anytime there is a headshot, that play is eligible for review. And it can be a penalty, it cannot be a penalty, and the player can be thrown out of the game as well. So basically, they review every single headshot.
And you don't see a lot of them, right? So when you're talking about worry about the slowdown of the game and all the rest of it, I'm right there with them. I think there should be, similar to what Ken Dryden said in his piece, there should be a zero tolerance to it and swift and fairly severe action taken. But and the thing is that you get a situation like with Matt Nichols and Aluminium there. I don't know as a defensive player what in the world Aluminium could have done unless he's coming with the knees are his target all the way in. Right, like so, yeah, maybe, and maybe ultimately that's what it's going to take here for defensive players to truly start targeting knees, because the knees aren't going to move. Right, Matt Nichols was falling awkwardly forward. People were saying to me, "Well, how about not targeting the head in the first place or the upper body?" And I guess you just really, a defensive player, all it leads down to, the trickle down effect is that you've really got to uber emphasize low shots, taking out knees, and that's where the game's going to end up. And players, and we've heard NFL players say before, I'd rather take a shot to the head than a shot to the knee. But, man, like that's just the way that the sport is. It's sort of, that's the way, where it's going, man.
Great stuff, Floyd. We appreciate your thoughts and opinions and the phone call. Thanks for taking the time. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Phil, you're on the big show. Go ahead.
Good morning, fellas. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad. So I wanted to start off my comments, I guess, with a question for you guys. I'm curious what you think, what needs to be... How do I phrase this? What needs to be fixed with the Jets? Like, what's the biggest problem, or what are the main problems, and how do you resolve them? And I'll let you answer, and then I'll respond after.
Holy smackers.
You know what? I'll put it to you this way, Phil. Hustler was in yesterday morning to pre-tape an interview, and I bet you, like, I looked at my watch, and an hour and 15 minutes had gone by, and I thought we'd been talking for 10 minutes on what the different aspects of the Jets. There's a little bit of everything, to be honest with you. And the glaring ones to me is a defensive zone play. And we even, Troy and I took some tweets, and Brandon did too, about Steve Mason yesterday and the positioning and all that. And all I saw on these graphs that we were sent is a guy wide open. And we're talking about the positioning of Steve Mason when there's literally nobody even near Johnson. So to me, it's... I think if they can shore up a little bit of everything, a lot of things will get better. And I know that's not much of an answer, but to sit here and think one or two things, like I know a lot of people want to blame coaching. I think coaching needs to get better, and they need to fix some of these issues. But I don't think if you change the coach, everything's better. I think they need to be better defensively. But if you're better defensively, I don't know if that's going to help the depth scoring. So to me, there's just a little bit of everything, and I think they have a little bit of everything to work on.
And to me, that's a horrible answer. Because think, if you're going to try and affect change to a little bit of everything, you're dead. Right? Think of your own personal life. You just can't. You have to target one or two things to specifically emphasize for here as a team and get better at that. And I'm going to – when I look and I see 3.83 as their goals against average right now, and that has been a problem for a couple of years now, to me, I'm just going to isolate defensive play, and not just defensive zone, but right across the board. The defensive play right now for the Winnipeg Jets sucks, and it will be an anchor. They don't have a chance in hell of making the playoffs until something borderline profound happens.
You know, every team in the NHL does video after every game, and they'll review things and try and fix in what gets better. It's almost to the point where if I'm Paul Maurice, I show video of this team from 2-3 years ago when they made the playoffs. And a lot of the guys, not a lot of the guys, but there are still faces from that playoff team on this one. And I would just show them how they played in the neutral zone and how they played inside their own end and say, why can't we do this? Like, I really don't think defensively you're asking them to do anything remotely near rocket science or anything like that. You're just asking them to be structurally sound, to give your team a chance on a bunch of these nights. And I think that's where you start. With how they've played defensively in a number of these games, you almost have to go right back to basics and just build this thing, like knock the Jenga tower down and build this thing back from the ground up and then slowly move forward from there. Because I agree with what you're saying though, JT, in that there's a lot of issues right now. But mainly all those issues stem from inside of their own end.
Phil?
Was that, after 7 years of a quote-unquote rebuild or draft and development, the fact that there's not one root cause still after 7 years is very concerning. Like, that response that you guys provided shows me that there are so many problems with this franchise. It's not just the coaching. It's not just the players. It's not systems. It's not one aspect of play, whether it's defensive play or goaltending or structure or penalty kill or power play. There's so many problems. You can't solve them with one change. And the fact that you can't solve them with one change, after selling this to the fans for 7 years...
Well, wait a minute. The seven-year thing is, I get it's taken 7 years, but... They went in a drastic change after making the playoffs. Like, they didn't bring back veteran players like Stepniak and Talusti and guys that literally helped them get in. They brought back their core and then went in a different direction to go young. And the drastic thing I get, because there's like one, the defensive zone play for 7 years has been an issue. So I get that, but like, do you think they're just so far gone right now that it's been 7 years and nothing's better? Like,
to be honest, I think the top tier talent on the team is far superior than it was before. That's without a question. But the depth, I would argue, is actually maybe a little better the year they made the playoffs when they had Frolik. I think that the defensive play, unfortunately, is still kind of the same. It's a lot of the same results. The goaltending, I think it's better now. Actually, I'm really high on Hellebuck. I think he's going to be a stud. I think last year he got kind of held out to dry pretty poorly in an unfair situation for a rookie goaltender, but that's a whole other topic. But I just think that the fact that regardless of what the issues are, there are so many issues that have to be fixed that aren't just fixed with one or two or three changes, that for me as a fan is concerning. Like, I went to the Toronto game and I went to the Columbus game this year. I left with 10 minutes left in the third period, and about half the arena did. Fans aren't sitting around waiting for this anymore. There was nothing to cheer for in those games. Never mind losing the game. There was nothing to cheer for. And it's not even entertaining. I don't want to spend money to go to these games and watch poor play like that. It's I was embarrassed for the players, and I was ashamed as a fan. And I think that the fact that it's taken this long and the results are still the same, regardless if the top-end talent is far superior than it was before, the fact of the matter is the results are still the same. And it's a results-based business. If I was struggling in my job, I wouldn't have a job anymore. And these guys have the same results and still have their jobs. So I think there needs to be a lot of changes. I think coaching, GM, core players, lots of good players, but sometimes good players don't play well together. And I think that's a big problem too. But
see, I understand that sentiment, Phil, but then you're starting over again. And I don't think they're there. I don't think they're starting over again. I'm at the point where I'm waiting and very perplexed to when and things are going to, like, take that heat. I think they've done drafting. I think they have high-end talent. I think they have some goaltending. I see the improvement. I see what they've built. The perplexing part to me is when it, you know, transitions takes place. If you want to gut everything again, you think 7 years was a long time? And I'm not opposed to a change. Like, I think that if 25 games from now, it's the defensive play, there might have to be some players changed. I'm not opposed to that. I'm not there yet because it's been six games, and I understand that it is a results-based business, but I'm not with you on the whole gutting everything, new GM, new coach, trade some players, and start all over again. The perplexing point to me is they have something. I'm wondering why it's not sort of working out.
This is the way I see it, boys, and this is a critical year. And the bottom line is that they couldn't come out of the gate and stumble. Couldn't do it this year. Or else exactly what we're hearing was going to happen. And when you're talking about the Winnipeg Jets and what they needed to try and accomplish this year, right now they're 26th in goals against per game. They're 28th on the penalty kill. They're 28th in shots allowed. They're 28th in Corsi 5-on-5. They suck across the board on every single defensive thing you can look at. They suck. And they're not allowed to this year. And you can't make the personnel change. You can't burn this to the ground. There's one move that can be made to have the most profound effect on this group. And you have to, if this team is inconsistent in game six of the season, there's something wrong. And when there's something wrong with a team, we all know what happens. There's only one head that gets cut off here. As much as I love Paul Maurice, I don't know what else. How else can you compel this team? And how long are you going to wait? Is it after 10 games when they're still god-awful and all these easy indicators? Like, how long are you going to absorb this? Not just as a fan base, but when you're Kevin Cheveldayoff looking at this, how long can you listen to excuses? Or, like, there's something wrong. There's a disconnect going on. And unfortunately, in pro sports, we all know where the guillotine comes down on. Those numbers are freaking horrible. And that's not, the exact thing that could not happen this year is where the Jets are at right now.
But six games in, and I'm not... I saw the three awful ones, and I saw the three okay ones. Is that not six games in going, like, a little bit of pushing the panic button? And if it is, fair enough. Like, I get why it is being pushed, but to me, it's to expect them to be totally in sync and firing on all cylinders and perfect right now, I think is – there's a lot of teams in the NHL six games in that aren't what we thought they'd be.
26th in goals against, 28th on the penalty kill, 28th in shots allowed, and 28th in Corsi 5-on-5. Those are horrible numbers. Those aren't sort of things and reflective and mirror images of last year, right? So, like, what exactly are we waiting for? Where there's some sort of magical thing going to happen? All of a sudden, this group is going to be more tuned in. You know, if it's one or two individuals that need to be shipped out, then the GM can worry about that. But there's if the system and its structure within that system is not taking a hold with the athletes you have in the room, at some point in time, you have to do something if you want to try and salvage a season. And all of these indicators of things defensively related to the part of the team that was being emphasized, everybody was talking about it coming into camp. And they're failing miserably at producing at any respectable rate things defensive right now.
And are 3-3.
Well, the 3-on-3 is the thing that lies the very most.
To me, that tells me they have something.
That's to me where you can get lost. And that's, you want to salvage a situation 3-on-3, sure. But if you want to break it down forensically and start looking at just what this team is...
Great stuff, Phil. Sorry, Troy, we got a break. We're way over, but we'll get to more of your calls next. 780-1290 on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
And the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Lots of your calls on the big show. TSN 1290, Jim, Troy, and Brandon. Jeff, you're on the program. Go ahead, Jeff.
Morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Just wanted to put some points out here, and I'll get your response in a bit. I was at the Blue Jackets game, and as a lot of fans, I left with about 10 minutes to go in the third period. I knew the game was done when Columbus made it 3-1. I don't really understand. I think Paul Maurice is good. He's great with the media and whatnot, but this is results-based business. And to be quite frank, like, going with Mason against the Blue Jackets, I didn't think was a wise choice. I don't care that he used to play for the Blue Jackets. This is a results-based business. Paul Maurice and his team needs wins. They should have kept going with Hellebuck. He was clearly on a roll. He was feeling good. He was playing excellent. Why you turn to Mason, I don't understand. To me, it seems like Paul Maurice is almost too buddy-buddy with his players. He needs results. The team needs results. We're still horrible in our own end. Like, there was times in that game where it was just a complete tire fire. We were running around like chickens with our heads cut off in our own end. Guys were wide open. The power play is still inconsistent at best. The penalty kill is an absolute dumpster fire. We just let teams set up. There's no aggression to go get the puck.
So what do you want done, Jeff?
I want results. I don't know why Paul Maurice was given an extension for, quite frankly, mediocre results. I don't understand that. And I don't understand why we still have Dano, Patan, Mathias in the bottom six. Give Lapon, Lemieux, Roslovic, give those guys a chance. We're getting nothing out of our bottom six. Nothing. If our top six isn't going, I mean, the chance of our bottom six getting a goal is slim to nil.
Yeah, the bottom six is a discussion.
Still don't have a 5-on-5 point yet.
And it's interesting you want to do that because so many other players want to just go with those guys and nobody else on the bottom six. Hey, Jeff, we appreciate the calls and the opinions. We got to take a break, and we'll get to more of them next. But thanks for weighing in on the big show, 780-1290. More of you next on the program, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
You wanted it back and we caved. TSN 1290 wants to better your basement with a host of cool add-ons. This time there are two caves to choose from, the Man Cave or the Mam Cave. A $500 men's or women's Burton Gear shopping spree from Alter Ego Sports. Pizza night for 10, courtesy of Boston Pizza in each cave. Two tickets to the upcoming UFC Fight Night, December 16th at Bell MTS Place. In the Man Cave, the Mam Cave has two tickets to a Shania Twain's Now Tour May 13th at Bell MTS Place. Both come with a Winnipeg Jets guys or girls night out, including two tickets to an upcoming home game at Bell MTS Place for the Jets and a customized Jets hockey jersey puck party. And both come with a Rink Water Nice Rink, Rink in a Box, the industry standard for outdoor rink starter kits, and a pair of tickets. Again, in the Man Cave to the UFC Fight Night, December 16th. Select your choice of cave at tsn1290.ca. We'll randomly draw a winner for each prize package Monday, October the 30th. The Big Show on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290 with Jim Toth, Troy Wesson, and Brandon Rewicki. Andy, you're on the program. Go ahead, Andy.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. How's it going today?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good, thanks. I wouldn't mind talking about Paul Maurice myself.
Go ahead.
His record... He's pretty stubborn. I don't know. I don't know why he would have put Mason in over Hellebuck. It made no sense. You know, hot goalies make coaches look good. I think he needs to be made look good right now.
Boy, I think you could have had a stone wall in that net, and those first three goals still would have been scored. Like, the best chance Mason had to make a save on those first three goals was the doggone breakaway.
Yeah, and he stopped a breakaway before that, too.
Yeah.
All right, he stopped a breakaway in that process, and then before that he made a couple of really nice saves.
When it was 1-0, he made three brilliant saves before it became 2-1, or 2-0. It was just, he was being inundated, folks.
I can't believe people – yeah, to be honest with you, Andy, I can't believe nobody's going. I can't believe Ehlers turned the puck over and caused a breakaway. I can't believe Wheeler turned the puck over at his own blue line and caused a breakaway. I'm a little perplexed on why people are sitting here going, bad choice to go with Mason.
I mean, people say that if they think that they're poor goals. Like, to me, you say – if you think that the soft goals, right, like there's a soft goal – to me, it seems like we sort of break down goals where the goalie had very little chance or no chance. And then you have, while you'd like to see him make that stop, Connor Hellebuck had a bunch of goals last year that were good goals, but you kind of, it made you sort of squint your face a little bit and go, man, you'd like to see him make a stop there. And then you have soft goals, right? And that's what killed Pav. Pav would have a nice game and let in two goals that were well-deserved, but then you had that soft one that was just a killer and the Jets would lose. Steve Mason, like the fifth goal, the softest goal he allowed, but you wouldn't even call it a soft goal. It was still a high rip, and maybe that was a shot where you'd like to see him, you know, make that save sort of thing. But for Pete's sake, there's no way, and I would challenge you, if you think he was crappy in the game, just go watch the first three goals on him. Or if you PVR'd the game, for Pete's sake, watch and to remind yourself what he was faced with in those first couple of periods.
To me, Mason had to play either Tuesday or Friday. And if you didn't like him playing Tuesday, fair enough. But if Hellebuck goes in and wins that game and they won four in a row, I think you still have to play Steve Mason.
I don't think he had to play. I understand the collecting dust and all the rest of it, but back we see goalies do it all the time that are in backup roles, right? Now, I know he's not in a backup role, but...
You need both goalies, and you can't let... Until you're solidified on one, you can't let one play two games and go 3-4 weeks without seeing a game. Because when he gets in, he's not going to be – he had to play one of these two games. He would have been sitting for 14 to 16 days if he didn't get a game in this week. And I don't get the why the people – he had to play one of these two games in my mind. You're going to need both of these goalies to be successful this year. And if you let one sit for 2-3 weeks, he's not going to be at his best.
From what I've seen this year, goaltending is not the issue this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. Anything else, Andy?
I was just going to say, I'm not blaming the loss on Mason, but you know what? You got to go with the hot goalie. I mean, we need the wins. Maybe if Hellebuck would have made one or two big stops, I would say Freddie Anderson stole the game in the first 15 minutes, the first game that the Jets played the Leafs. Sometimes a hot goalie, steals a win when you don't deserve one. I'm not saying that Ehlers didn't cough up the puck or Wheeler didn't cough up the puck, but Paul Maurice's love affair with some players, like Adam Lowry, I just don't get it, He's trying to make players into players that they're not, Adam Lowry on the power play, Nick Batan trying to be a fourth line player. Some of his choices just don't make sense to me.
You don't have to be sorry, Andy. Like, this is what the show's for. We always say all opinions welcome, so we thank you for weighing in and bringing up the points that, are driving the discussion around this team right now.
That whole thing against the Leafs that Freddie Anderson stole the game in the first 5 minutes, I think is horse crap. They scored 7 goals. They had 8 shorthanded situations in the game. They still scored 7 goals. That first game against the Jets was just a little bit of a tickler as to what was coming down the pipe for the Toronto Maple Leafs from an offensive standpoint.
He held the fort early on, but yeah,
he held
to say he changed the game is disingenuous.
I feel in those 3 power plays, if they score twice, it's a different game. I think when Toronto ties it, it doesn't go the way it goes. But as opposed to when they go up 2-0 and then the wheels fall off.
The Jets were going to get kicked in that game, I think. To present the notion, if the Jets score in 2 of those 3 power plays, there's a different game. Well, it didn't. I mean, what's the likelihood that you're going to score on 2 or 3 power plays, and why are we making things up to that degree?
Well, right? It's just the pace of the game. Like, they had a great start in that game.
I didn't think they had a great start. And you keep saying that, man. They had 3 power plays in the first 12 minutes.
And to get those power plays, you have to be going and drawing penalties. And to have the other team making mistakes the same way as when the Jets do. And that's what they had the Leafs doing to get those power plays.
A lot of people, there was the Jets were applying pressure early on in that game when they were on the power play. And they had the exact same number of scoring chances in that first period, even with all those power plays. I
don't think they had a power play till the seventh minute of the game, to which they were shooting the Leafs and,
inside the first 12 minutes of that game.
Brian, you're on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Hi, Brian. No, Brian. We'll go to Andrew. Andrew, you are on the Big Show. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, hey, guys. Couple things. I want to talk about Maurice and Steve Mace. So in the first six games of the season, I'm not at all surprised or actually even disappointed in the results. We're 3-3. I'm okay with that. What I am concerned about is the fact that in how we've played in those six games. We've probably played one, maybe two games okay. We literally didn't show up for three of the six games. That's the concern to me. Jim, you keep saying that it's only six games and nothing to be concerned about. It's six games. It's the preseason. It's all of last season. It's the year before. So don't talk about it being six games. As far as Steve Mason goes, Steve Mason is very much similar right now to what we had in net in Andre Pavlik, a player who made a lot of big saves, fantastic saves, but he was extremely inconsistent. He didn't know when to make the big saves. The Jets were still in that game at 3-1. He let in goal number four and goal number five, which were saves he should make. And I will even argue with you on the first goal of the game, which was a breakaway, yes, but more than 50% of breakaways get stopped in the NHL. He was deep in his own net. He was not a confident goalie on that first goal. And you can see the players play differently with a goalie that they feel confident in. You guys would have lambasted Pavlik had he played the way Mason's played in his three starts this year.
With all the respect in the world, I think you should go to jail for that comment. For comparing Mason, what you've seen, to Pavlik at this point in time. For what the technical soundness of Steve Mason compared to Pavlik, I think that's outrageous.
And, Andrew, it's literally been six games. So thank you. I understand some of the same issues are there, but there's a lot of teams six games in that don't look good. And there's a lot of teams that have the numbers, as Ryan on Twitter does. The Pittsburgh Penguins are second worst in goals against average at 4.14. They give up 34 shots a game.
But
they
give
up 34. I could go on and on. It's six games. Now, if it's 12 and 15 games, I will change my tune, Andrew. But look at it this other way. If they were 5-1 right now, like the Tampa Bay Lightning, and all the numbers were better, I would still be sitting here going, it's only been six games.
I disagree with what you're saying as far as dishing it off because it's only six games because of like that color. Like part of what he was saying in that call is that when you forensically break down the manner in which they're losing, they are doing so in exactly what they came into camp all talking about not doing and swore to improve, and it's far too much of a mirrored image from last year from a defensive standpoint right now. And it's just all we're going to do, I think, after 12 games is look back and understand like these negative indicators. You know, the positive stuff early on, I don't put so much emphasis on. If things are going well, it's cool. But when you're doing the same things that you've done in the past early on, it's I agree with the callers that say, hey man, it's kind of a continuation here that we're seeing.
My point is six games in. I wouldn't be sitting here going, everything's great as well. I didn't think six games in I'd be sitting here going, wow, everything's fixed. Everything looks really great. They're 10th defensively. They're 10th goals against. It's awesome. I didn't think in a hockey season that a team would come in and go, everything's fixed. It's awesome. Six games in. Look out for the season.
But I think that when it's as poor as it's been, that it's early talk gets trimmed down to maybe the next four games, and you reach the 10-game mark.
And that's what I've been saying.
If it's the same then like it's – I think the it's early thing gets extended when it's positive, but when it's as negative as it's been, then that kind of chatter, it can't fly for much longer. It really can't. You have the game against Minnesota, and then you have kind of that bushel of games in a short time span a week after that, and I think – at that point, you get a pretty good idea of what this team's going to be moving forward.
And I'll sit here and do that then, like 15 games in, and they're 3-9.
I think 10 is more than enough. The 15 is at that point.
Jets are a week away from being last in the Central.
Thanks for the call, Andrew. They're also a point away from being in the playoffs, if you want to put it that way. Jeff, you're on
schedule.
You're on the program, 780-1290. Hi, Jeff. We'll go to Norm. Norm, you're on the big show. Go ahead, 780-1290, Boss Pizza fan line, if you want to weigh in on the conversation. Go ahead, Norm. No Norm? How about Coach Norm?
Coach Ed.
Coach Ed.
Hi, good morning, guys.
How are you?
I'm wonderful. I wish the Jets were doing better, though.
Do tell.
So I agree with you fellas that it's only six games in, but the thing that's concerning, obviously, is that the Jets looked a whole lot worse in the three losses than they did as good as they did in the three wins. But I just want to go back to what the two big moves were over the summer, what I consider the two big moves over the summer, what the Jets did, and that was sign Steve Mason, which basically was a no-news deal to me because it was, what, 2 years at $4 million a year? Like, that isn't a major significant free agent signing to me. They could, as far as I'm concerned, they should have saved that money and went with made the decision to go with Hellenbeck and Hutchinson.
So you would have been you would have been fine going into training camp going nothing's changed with the goaltending.
Well, sure, they got rid of
he was gone. He played a grand total of 6 games maybe. Like, you would have been fine going into training camp going the Jets are staying pat with the goaltending.
With they got rid of Pavlik. So they would have went with
they got rid of Pavlik during the year last year.
Yes, that's right. But Hellenbeck has shown signs that he could be a number one A1 goalie. He's got had like 3 or 4 shutouts last year. But the other big thing that I consider is even more at the root of their problem, their defense. And one of the big moves is they kept Toby. Sure, it's nice that they're loyal to him or they have some sentimental attachment. But I think this whole thing that Las Vegas was interested in him is just nonsense. I don't think Las Vegas was interested in him at all. And I think if you recall back a few years ago when they did make the playoffs, who did Anaheim go after on defense? Every chance they got, they hit Toby.
Yeah, they really went after him against Columbus, too, I thought.
Yeah, they did. And I think I've noticed in a lot of games, maybe not in the Carolina game, but in a lot of games, whenever he has the puck in the Jets' corner, they always finish their check. And he coughed up the puck in the last goal, against Columbus.
He's being utilized as a third pairing guy for the most part right now, though, right?
And which is what he should be. At
and
this
as far as third pairings go, you're not going to get much better than Toby Enstrom.
He had a rough game against Columbus, and that turnover was bad. But I thought the games prior to that, he was actually pretty decent, mostly playing beside Tucker Pullman in some of the Jets' wins. But yeah, he's not the guy you look for to play 20 minutes a night anymore. And at his age, it's not the worst thing in the world. And he's going to be gone next year with his contract running up.
Yeah,
I think Enstrom's one of the lesser parts of the negativity around the Jets right now.
That's saying something. Thanks for the call, Coach Ed. We'll take more of them when we come back on The Big Show, 780-1290. If you want to weigh in on the conversation, we'd love to hear from you here on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki, and the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Also, your comments can be coming in at text at 1290-90 with standard message rates. Applying back to the Boss Pizza fan line, Ryan, you're on The Big Show. Go ahead, Ryan.
Hello, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Thanks for having me, but the name is Brian.
Brian, sorry. We'll have to let you go, Ryan. Brian, welcome to the program. Go ahead, Brian.
Thanks for having me again.
Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, I want to weigh in on this a little bit, if you don't mind. You've got these high-priced athletes that make anywhere between $900,000 to $8 million a year, And you got Maurice telling everybody that, you know, well, we weren't mentally prepared for this game. Like, these guys make a lot of money. If you can't get up and mentally prepare yourself for a game at $8 million a year and you're working anywhere between 10 to 23 minutes a night, then maybe you're in the wrong profession. I just don't get it. None of these guys, everybody says Jets are fueled by passion. Well, there's no passion and there's no heart in some of these guys. It's like they go through the motion. I don't understand it, and I don't understand, like, the penalty kill is the same as it was last year. All they do is they collapse in front of their net, and they don't even chase the puck carrier. It's almost to the point where it gets frustrating to watch them because nothing ever changes. Anyway, I'll let you guys talk about that. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, thanks for calling in, Brian. We appreciate you taking the time and your opinion on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290.
Thanks, Brian. I agree with you in that I don't understand how there can be such a remarkable lack of consistency in what the Jets are trying to do out there in, like, we're at game six. So when you're talking about, you know, guys coming out saying, hey, we're going to have games like that during the course of the season, normally a bunch of games sort of fall in front and you can get a little bit, you know, have a sort of a flat effort or not all be tuned in. I don't understand how there can be a lack of attention to detail this early in the season, in a season that right across the board organizationally and fan base that everyone puts so much weight and expectation on. I'm right there with you, man. I don't understand it. I think it's a real good, like, something's wrong. That's the only way to me this happens this early in the season when you get this much of a spectrum of inconsistency in what they're doing on the ice.
Any thoughts?
I mean, it's hard to argue against that, isn't it? When you see Groundhog Day halfway into the half of the season has been Groundhog Day, right? I don't know how many teams that aren't openly tanking or openly building for the future have no-show games or have blowout games the way the Jets seemingly do on a consistent basis.
Yeah, I mean, it's I'm with you on the concerns with most fans and from what we've seen. It's startling to me how we've seen literally in six games a little bit of everything. Like, just absolutely everything. The game against Edmonton might be one of the best games I've seen this team play, not just in the first six, but, like, in a long time. Vancouver, I thought they withstood a very hard-checking team, and they pulled one out. Carolina couldn't get through the neutral zone, and they found a way to win. Toronto was absolutely I couldn't believe it. And the game in Calgary, I couldn't imagine a worse start for this team. And you mix in the other ones, and then Columbus comes in here, and I understand what Brian was saying because a lot of people say that, and a lot of people put that on the coach. I don't put that on the coach. You have a game to play. I know guys I have to tell to calm down on my senior men's team before a game on a Sunday afternoon, so I can't imagine being in the National Hockey League and all that, but to me, it's a little all over the map, and I really don't know what to make of it yet, so I want to see a few more games. All right, we appreciate the phone calls and the time and the opinions, as always. And we have a pair of tickets to Roger Waters at Bell MTS Place on Sunday, October 22nd, 780-1290. The 12th caller through gets that. We'll be back tomorrow morning to tee up the Jets and the Wild. And, of course, we'll take more of your calls as well. On behalf of Troy Wessler, Brandon Rewicki, and myself, Jim Toth, we thank you for listening. And the Big Show will be back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.